Supervisors, please take your seats. Supervisors, please take your seats. First, we'll start out with roll call. Please click on the yes for your roll call. We have 34 board members present. That's a quorum. If you want to please stand, and we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance. On the agenda will be elections and organization. We're going to start out with nominations for the chair for County Board of Supervisors for a term of 2 years commencing April 15th. Oh, I'm sorry. First, we're going to have to be sworn in so we can do this. Thank you, Mr. O'Malley. We're going to have Judge Scott Horn please come up and everyone stand, and we'll be taking the oath.
That's always all we need is to start out with an invalid vote. I just beforehand, let me just, for those of you who had elections, congratulations. And for everyone, we certainly appreciate your service. It's not always appreciated in the moment, but real valuable service to this community. So thank you. Please raise your right hand. Aye, and then state your name. That's good. I didn't hear any state your name. Having been elected to the office of? And then state the supervisory district. Swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin. And will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of said office, to the best of my ability. So help me God. Congratulations.
Now at this time, I'd like everyone who hasn't already signed this half piece of paper that was on your certificate to sign that so we can have Judge Horn sign those for us tonight. If everyone is, so we have a few yet. Later. Okay, now we're moving on to elections and organization. First on the item 1/4, nomination for chair of the County Board of Supervisors for a term of 2 years, commencing April 15, 2008, to succeed Steve Doyle. How's your pleasure?
I'd like to nominate Steve Doyle as chair of the Cross County Board.
Okay, Mr. Steve Doyle has been nominated. Seconded by Andrea Richmond. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Nominations are now closed. We will take a voice vote for the nomination of Steve Doyle for chairman of the County Board of Supervisors. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. I have one abstention, Mr. Ebert. Mr. Doyle is now our County Board Chair.
Thank you very much.
Now we have item 2/4, nominations for first Vice Chair of the County Board of Supervisors for a term of 2 years commencing April 15, 2008 to succeed George Hammes. Do I have any nominations? Audrey Cotter? Oh. Nomination for Tara Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
By Margaret Wood. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Nominations are now closed. We will also take a voice vote on this one. All in favor of Tara Johnson being the first Vice Chair of the County Board of Supervisors, please say yes.
Yes.
And opposed? Carried unanimously. Tara Johnson is our first Vice Chair. Item 3/4, nominations for second Vice Chair of the County Board of Supervisors for a term of 2 years commencing April 15, 2008 to succeed Tara Johnson. Do I have any nominations? Vicki Burke? Okay, Tom Rauch is nominated.
Second.
Second by Jill Billings. Are there any other nominations? Jim Burns?
I nominate Ralph Geary.
Jim Burns nominates Ralph Geary.
Second.
And the second is Mr. Jeff Schrader. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Nominations are now closed. We will do a secret ballot for second vice chair. You will get this little purple ballot. What you will do is you will write down either Ralph Geary or Tom Rauch, and then you will fold it in half, and we will collect the ballots then and count them.
Thank you.
While Marion is and Gary are doing that, I want to cover a couple of things of housekeeping nature. First of all, I've got some sign-up sheets here for the gold sheet. I think each of you have that. Please fill that out. We need that before you leave. In fact, maybe we'll even have somebody collect those. This is the information that's going to go in the directory with regard to who you are, how to get a hold of you, and what information you're comfortable being in the having in the directory and what information you don't want in the directory. The next thing, I'm going to pass this around, which is the sign-up sheet for the jail tour. there are four different dates and times that people can sign up. This is not just for new board members, and it's not just for veterans who have not done the tour. Even if you have already done the jail tour, that is obviously one of the biggest things we're going to be talking about over the next few months is that jail renovation. And when you're on this jail tour, they can point out things like, here's where the hallway is going to go, and this is the pod that we're talking about renovating and so forth. So I would encourage you to sign up for one of these jail tour dates so that you can have it fresh in your mind as these votes are coming up. Ray, can I get you to take this and start passing it around? Ralph, did I see your hand up?
I thank you, Ralph. Ralph's point is that the public records law covers emails that are done as a part of your county business. So whether that email is on your personal computer or on a county computer, it is a public record and can be requested. So we have an email site where you can place your emails. That are county business, so that that you don't have to save them on your home computer. And I'm not sure if that email address is in your packet, but we can certainly give it to you at your next meeting, so that you know where to forward those county emails. Are there any questions about that?
Roger.
That there is a county site that they can have a county email address. And that's something I think that we may want to go over at some other time so that they have that opportunity.
Right.
Let's have a discussion on that. I think that's really important. Bill, why don't you go a little bit further in depth? Actually, let's hold that for just a second. I assume people want to know the outcome of the vote.
The outcome of the vote is Tom Rauch, 17, Ralph Gary, 15, one blank, and one abstain.
Okay. Congratulations to Tom, congratulations to both for a fine race, I think. Round of applause for both of those gentlemen. Let me emphasize what Bill is going to be talking about. And actually, I'm going to have Bill hold that for just a minute till we get past some of these other things. We've got some stuff on the agenda. But when we get to, Bill, let's under the county administrator's report, why don't you take a couple minutes to write some notes. This whole thing about email and public records and all that thing is extremely important, especially for new board members. Want you to understand that you can't just get and receive emails relate to county business and not expect that if somebody calls you up, like the La Crosse Tribune, and says, we want to see all your emails on this topic, and if they go to your house, you say, well, that's my personal email address. Doesn't work that way. You are all public officials now. These are public records, and so hold off on filling the part out here about your email address till you get the sense from Bill about what the ramifications are of using that for county business. And then John, do you know the address that they would be using for the county one if they want to do it that way?
Yeah, we can get them that information.
Okay. If you want to do that, just put a note where it says email address. Use county and put that in parentheses, and Marion will know what you mean by that. So let's hold off for that for just a minute. The next thing that we have on the agenda is the starting time. Per our ordinance, at this meeting, we need to decide if we're going to continue to always meet for our regular meetings at this time on the third Thursday of each month, or if we would want to change that time. Take a motion or comments anybody has with regard to our official starting time for the rest of this term. Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, I'd make a motion that we meet at 6 o'clock on the third Thursday. Is that whatever as has been?
As has been.
Yes, sir.
Is there a second? Seconded by Tara Johnson. Any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. All right. Chair's report. There's a few things that I need to mention, and, of course, I got to find my notes. Our district attorney, Tim Grinke, is here. He received an award from the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, the 2008 Voices of Courage Award, and I want to read what that has to do with, and then I'm going to ask Tim to come forward and to say a couple words, because I think that even a lot of veteran board members may not know Tim, given that he took over from Judge Horn when Judge Horn was district attorney, so he hasn't been in that office for as long as some other people. For allowing his unwavering respect for survivors and his understanding of the dynamics of sexual assault to guide his work, for being a resource and a source of support for members of his community, and for his ability to educate others on the impact of sexual assault. I don't do criminal law anymore, but I did a few years ago when Tim was starting out, and I have to say that there are few prosecutors that I've worked with that I've had greater respect for. Tim has done just a great job as assistant district attorney and now as district attorney, and I think that people pretty unanimously say if anybody deserves an award like this, Tim does. And so I'd ask Tim to come forward and make a couple comments to the board, please.
Thanks. Well, first of all, welcome to all the new board members, and for those who might not know me, and Tim Grinke, the district attorney. Anyone who knows me well knows that this is about the time where I usually start cracking jokes. But tonight I'm going to be a little more serious because I'm really humbled to get this kind of an award, and I'm usually not nervous talking in groups, but somehow talking about this and talking about myself is a little more difficult than what's normal for me. So bear with me. As Steve mentioned, I've been in the office for a while as an assistant district attorney, and I prosecuted my first sexual assault case in 1996, and I did an awful job. I made a horrible decision and a horrible plea agreement, and throughout the years, that wasn't my primary focus. I did other types of crimes. The victim in that case, though, went on to law school and went on to become a prosecutor, and I met her again 10 years later. And didn't really remember her name because she was married. And when we reintroduced ourselves, I was kind of nervous, thinking, you know, this woman's going to not like me because I really did a bad job on that case. But actually, she thanked me and said that I gave her a lot of courage, and I always respected her. And the way I handled her case, even though the outcome wasn't what she wanted, gave her the motivation to go on and to be successful. And that touched me a great deal. A couple of years ago, when Judge Horn was my boss, he assigned me the task of doing sexual assault cases as kind of a primary responsibility. And I decided then that that would be something that I really needed to dig into to make a difference. They're the toughest cases that we prosecute because they're difficult to prove. They're difficult to prosecute both for the victim and for the prosecutors involved. And, of course, they're important for the community. And as a district attorney, I've been trying to make that a priority of mine to try to do the best we possibly can in those cases, each and every one, because they do deserve our utmost attention. And I'm going to finish just by reading a little bit of what I said to the people in Madison when I got the award at the Capitol a couple weeks ago. And I was just overwhelmed to get an award like this from Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. It's not something I lobbied for, campaigned for, even knew existed. So to get an award like this from fellow prosecutors and advocates was really something that I will always treasure. My inspiration for prosecuting these cases has always been the brave and courageous survivors of sexual assault who have to run the gauntlet of police, prosecutors, defense attorneys, jurors, and judges, all the while trying to find their voice in a system that is really designed to protect the perpetrator's constitutional rights. For us prosecutors to try to balance those scales of justice in these cases is challenging, mentally draining, and sometimes emotionally overwhelming. But at the end of the day, whatever the outcome of a case, I have to feel some sense of pride and accomplishment for giving this case my ultimate effort. Because no matter how overwhelmed I may feel about my job, how much I might be afraid to take on a challenging case, or how I might feel a never-ending disappointment in our system of justice, all those thoughts and feelings pale in comparison to the incredible frustration and sheer terror that those victims of sexual violence have had to endure and will continue to endure while running the gauntlet through our system and beyond. As prosecutors, we don't always win these trials. We seldom achieve the sense of justice that we seek, and we can't ever erase the incredible damage that has been done. But we can strive to make whatever small difference we can in the lives of survivors who look to us to provide them a voice, to strive for justice, and for the courage to take on these incredibly challenging cases. And again, I'm overwhelmed to accept this award, and thank you for recognizing me here tonight. I really think it's undeserved. As a prosecutor, I just try to do the best I can, and just thankful that somebody noticed. And the next time I talk to you, if I get the chance, I promise it'll be a lot more fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. I want to jump to the addendum right now because we have another group of people that I want to recognize, and I'm going to ask the sheriff to come in here. Those of you who came in the south entrance noticed the Bearcat that was parked outside the door and noticed the bullet holes in the actually, they didn't go through, but the bullet holes in the windshield. And we had some people from La Crosse County who represented us well in the incident in Richland County recently. And we've prepared a proclamation I'm going to ask Mr. O'Malley to read, and then I'm going to ask the sheriff to come forward and talk a little bit about that incident.
Proclamation, this should be in your addendum in your packet. Acknowledging exceptional leadership by La Crosse County Sheriff's Department in Richland County incident April 2008. Whereas under the direction of Sheriff Helgeson and Chief Deputy Wolf, La Crosse County Sheriff's Department staff helped to end an armed standoff in rural Richland County, and whereas in cooperation with regional law enforcement agencies, La Crosse County Sheriff's Department personnel served a major role in resolving what has been called the worst firefight in Wisconsin law enforcement history after an exchange of over 500 rounds of ammo and an estimated 15 homemade explosives. And whereas the Sheriff's Department's capability was greatly enhanced by use of the La Crosse County Armored Bearcat driven by Sergeant Zimmerman, which received significant damage without any injury to law enforcement personnel, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board, on behalf of the residents of La Crosse County, does hereby acknowledge exceptional leadership by La Crosse County Sheriff's Department in Richland County incident April 2008.
That proclamation moved by Vicki Burke. Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Burns. All in favor of the proclamation say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Before the sheriff talks, I want to mention that, you know, this issue of the county receiving the Bearcat came before the board a couple years or so ago and was a somewhat contentious issue. I was one of those that, you know, had my concerns or doubts about whether we really had a lot of terrorists in western Wisconsin. But I have to say, after an incident like this, that I'm a convert. I really think that having had that Bearcat saved lives, not just in this particular incident, but in my discussions with law enforcement personnel, probably in other incidents also. And you really can't put a price on a life that is saved. And so, you know, not afraid to say, changed my mind on that. I think that we have a good investment there, and actually it wasn't even our money. It was the federal government, so that makes it even better. So, Sheriff, if you can come forward and tell us a little bit about what happened.
Well, thank you for the proclamation. We certainly appreciate it at the Sheriff's Department. The situation that occurred down in Richland County was something, of course, that you wouldn't expect in a rural area here in western Wisconsin, but something that we prepare for and always realize is a possibility. And unfortunately, that came true here not too long ago. Some of the difficulties that we faced was the residence of this gentleman was up on a hill, and he had a good view of surrounding area for hundreds of yards. So it made it very difficult for us to approach. And actually, what started all this was he hadn't paid his taxes, so the Richland County Sheriff's Department was simply trying to serve some legal papers on him. They weren't trying to evict him the day that they were there. They were simply trying to get him some legal papers. They never got close to the house. They were 50 to 100 yards away when he opened up with a high-powered rifle, and they subsequently needed to run to get out of their way. They regrouped. We talked about this and planned for a few days. They asked for our Bearcat to come down, and we sent down some individuals that are trained to deal with these type of situations from our emergency response team. After a plan was developed, with what we were trying to do on Thursday morning when we approached the house was we had a cell phone that they can only call, the gentleman could only call out to our command post so we could begin negotiations and talk to him to try to get this resolved peacefully. The Bearcat was approaching. We had eight persons in the Bearcat at the time, and they were using the bullhorn to announce over the speaker saying they were there for peaceful reasons. They simply wanted to drop off the cell phone so that we could begin some negotiations and talk to him. And while they were speaking to him on the cell phone is when he opened fire with a 300 Magnum is what they suspect, which is a very high-powered deer rifle. Certainly, the use of the Bearcat, in my opinion, saved lives, but it went much beyond that. It went to our training and to the equipment that we have, and I have to thank the previous county board for their support in allowing us to have the necessary training as well as having confidence in us to get us the equipment that we need. And I really believe the combination of the equipment and the training is what made the difference there. No one was hurt. The gentleman wasn't hurt, and fortunately everything ended successfully. So I look forward to working with the new county board in the future and on these issues that many are difficult, but I want to thank those of you from the past that allowed us to get the necessary training and equipment to have this end peacefully. Thank you.
I think a round of applause for the sheriff and the sheriff's department. Thank you, Sheriff. Going down back on the original agenda, the committee preference sheets, I need those tonight. If you want to serve on a committee, you better get that into me because I have to make those appointments. We have meeting notices going out later this week for one of the committees. So before you leave here tonight, make sure that Marion gets your committee preference sheet. Steve mentioned during the orientation that we have our county board retreat on Tuesday, April 29th, at starting at noon at Forest Hills. We'll start out with a lunch, and then we'll get into the rest of the details and the program after that. A couple people have said that noon is a little earlier than they can get there. Fine, show up when you can. We'll be going, what would you guess, till 4-ish maybe? You know, so if you're only there for the last hour or last 2 hours, whatever, if you can at least try to get there, we'd appreciate that. Board member conference reports. For those of you who are new on the board, this is a thing that we do every month. For board members who have been at, say, Wisconsin Counties Association conference or some other sort of thing where you've learned something that you think would be useful for your fellow board members to hear about, this is your opportunity to say, hey, I was at this and here's what we did and so forth. So are there any board members that in the last 30 days went to, I mean, it was a little quiet over the last month, but anybody have any reports for this month? Mr. Bina.
I thank you, Mr. Chair. I mentioned last month that we were having a Coon Creek tour of the first watershed in the United States. The tour and day-long session starting at 10 o'clock in the morning is at the American Legion in Coon Valley. They're going to have a few speakers talking about the first watershed in the United States, and then there's going to be a meal, and then there's going to be a tour of the hills of Coon Valley and an explanation about what happened. And if anybody wants to go, I need to get numbers into them for noon meals and a bus ride. So if anybody's interested in going on the 25th, that's a Friday, let me know.
Talk to Mr. Bina before you leave tonight if you're interested in going on that tour. Couple more things that I have to mention then. City of La Crosse has approved an ordinance allowing a county board member to serve on the Municipal Transit Utility Board, the MTU board. If anybody is interested in that, it's an appointment from the mayor, but I'm assuming that he would take input from me. So let me know if you're interested, and I'll get your name over to Mayor Johnsrud right away so that you can be appointed to the MTU board. A thing that I mentioned at the orientation I want to mention to the full board, one of the things that I think is really important to start out from the very beginning of our term is to learn how to work together, get along with each other, and understand that we all have common goals and objectives in our role as county board supervisors. One of the things that I think helps that are things like the retreat that we're doing later this month. But another thing that we do, and I'd like to really expand it so that you know, all board members feel like you're a part of this, and that is after the county board meeting this evening and after most evenings, I would encourage people to join myself, Mr. O'Malley, and others. We're going to be going to Sloopy's tonight, Sloopy's on the north side, and it's not a chance to, you know, twist arms for votes, or Mr. Magny will write us up in the La Crosse Tribune and file complaints against us, but it is a chance to get to know other county board members, and I think that really is important. We can sit here all night and yell at each other, but if afterwards we can talk and you know, have some enjoyment together, I think that really makes for a more respectable and more respectful type of a county board. And I really would encourage people then, after the board meeting tonight, this is our first chance you know, to join all of us over at Sloopy's on the north side. I think that's it for my board report. Is there anybody that has anything that I didn't cover that you think I need to? Okay, Marion, what else besides the jail tour do they need to get to you? No, that's going around. That's the jail tour. Was there something else on it? Oops.
Okay, that's okay. The other two things that are on that clipboard, so you may need to get it back, is number one, there's a white binder that we always give supervisors along with the minutes from each monthly meeting. So if you want the minutes, mark the yes. If you want a binder, check that. If you don't want them, check you don't want them. Also, there's another one in there that asks if you want the minutes from the standing committees. These are all on the website for the new people, so you don't have to get them in paper form, but if you would like them, we will definitely provide them. And that's all the standing committee minutes from each month. And so if you want those, then yes or no on that also. That's it.
Any questions on that? My apologies. I didn't realize that. I thought we had three separate clipboards. I didn't know that. So, because I don't follow directions very well. Sorry about that. So send that around once it goes all the way through. Any other questions for Marion? All right. Then that gets us to the next item on the agenda, the guy that can walk through fire, throw himself downstairs, and still keep going, our county administrator, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you so much, Steve. I have a few proclamations to share with you. I apologize for the length of my report tonight. There are a number of items that we really want to bring you up to speed on. But the serious things that we talk about quite often with proclamations are really recognizing people. And I'll quickly go through these, but I don't want to make light of the folks that we are recognizing. Proclamation April 13th, 2008, National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Whereas Congress has designated April 13th National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, recognizing the work of professional public safety dispatch communications personnel, and whereas the 911 system celebrates 40 years nationwide and 25 years in La Crosse County, telecommunicators are the unsung and rarely recognized heroes of public safety, and whereas La Crosse County Public Safety Dispatch Operation handles well over 110,000 calls per year, serving law enforcement, fire, and emergency medical providers, now therefore be it resolved the La Crosse County Board on behalf of residents and all public safety agencies 24/7 of La Crosse County does hereby acknowledge the dedicated work La Crosse County dispatch personnel during National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, April 13th to 19th, 2008.
Is there a motion to approve the proclamation? Moved by Vicki Burke. Is there a second? Seconded by Jill Billings. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
I want to take a minute just to acknowledge that we do have two members of our telecommunicators work group here attending. And Mike Thompson, and also Keith Butler, who works with that area, and one of our new dispatchers, Alfred Liano. These are just representatives of a 22 telecommunicators, five supervisors, support staff, and emergency government. These are the folks that are actually in a position that provide the nuts and bolts of making sure that all the public safety staff that go directly into harm's way are there on time. And what we may not not recognized, as La Crosse County is one of the first consolidated dispatch operations in the state. You'll hear other counties get recognized for becoming a consolidated dispatch operation. That's almost old news for us. We've been doing it for, I think, close to 30 years. And just so I know we don't thank them often enough, and they're in the trenches, you know, in the basement of the law enforcement center taking calls, and many times they don't always know what happened to that individual call or that individual victim. But again, we thank you for the work that you do.
I'd ask those folks to stand up, and let's give them a round of applause. Thanks for the work you do. It's a great job, and I know it's a lot of hard work.
And pass that on to Jay Leffler, who wasn't able to be here. He is our department head. You'll probably see him quite often. You won't tend to see these folks that actually do the direct work, but Jay is our department head, does a great job. He wasn't able to be here tonight. Next proclamation I have is recognizing volunteers who help all county staff actually do much of the work that we do in our community. April 27th to May 3rd, 2008, Volunteer Recognition Week. Whereas April is Volunteer Recognition Month, and whereas many of our citizens spend hours volunteering their time and energy to improve La Crosse County services and programs, and whereas it is important to acknowledge the effort volunteers have put forth to strengthen our communities and services. Whereas volunteers inspire by example and can make a difference in countless ways, and whereas La Crosse County has provided opportunities for people to become actively involved in enhancing their communities, and whereas citizens of La Crosse County have consistently been involved as volunteers through Hillview and Lakeview Healthcare Centers and La Crosse County Aging Unit, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board, on behalf of the residents of La Crosse County, does hereby proclaim the week of April 27th through May 3rd, 2008 as Volunteer Recognition Week in La Crosse County, and does hereby respectfully request that the residents of the county give recognition to the volunteers for their many contributions.
Moved by Roger Plesha. Is there a second? Seconded by Tara Johnson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
And the last proclamation that I have is La Crosse County Government Month. And again, this is just a small way of recognizing the many, many people that serve La Crosse County as employees. La Crosse County Government Month, whereas La Crosse County employs over 1,400 people working within an annual budget of $212.98 million, yet at the same time, La Crosse County maintains the third lowest operating tax levy out of the 72 Wisconsin counties. And whereas La Crosse County government employees are committed to excellence in their work, they celebrate public service, anticipate changing needs, and respect diversity. La Crosse County employees inspire integrity, pride, trust, and respect within the organization by encouraging involvement and creativity as a source of new ideas to continuously improve services. And whereas April 6th through the 12th is National County Government Week, America's counties provide essential services protecting residents in times of natural disasters and emergencies, operating the criminal justice system, and serving the community at all stages of life. And whereas counties serve to make America's community stronger, safer places to live and raise families, counties police our streets, save lives, keep families healthy, repair roads and bridges, plow snow, help troubled youth, train laid-off workers, and perform countless other jobs. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim the month of April La Crosse County Government Month.
Moved by Jerry Sobranek. Is there a second? Seconded by Margaret Wood. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
The next item I have a unique pleasure to recognize very specifically a department that I can say honestly, without their help, we couldn't operate as a county government. I've been in county government over 32 years, as a matter of fact. I was elected to the county board in Eau Claire at the age of 19 and started my county career, and I can tell you that by far, without a doubt, we have the best county finance department of any that I've ever worked with in my years of service. And this year, for the second time in a row, we are able to recognize our finance department, and I'm going to ask Gary to make a few words. This is the second year in a row that we've received the certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting, and recognize that only the top 5% of governments in the nation, local governments in the nation, receive this award. And with that, I'm going to go over to the podium and do something a little official here rather than just reading a proclamation. But I've worked in local government for over 32 years, and Gary and his staff, who I'll ask Gary to recognize, have now continued to set the bar as high as we can and receive recognition, by the way, from their peers within local government. Again, the second year in a row to receive this certificate on behalf of our financial statement that comprehensively shows what our financial picture is. Gary, please come forward. Thank you, Gary.
I'm going to pass the award off to Sharon Davidson, the Assistant Finance Director, and recognize Sharon and Michelle and Sean. Michelle and Sean are our two internal auditors, but it's with their expertise and their hard work and their effort that we were able to achieve this award. So I want to hand this off to Sharon. And as Steve mentioned a little bit earlier this evening, this is the comprehensive annual financial report. And new board members, along with existing board members, will get the updated version in June or July. But this is what we received the award on. It's awarded up by an impartial panel of our peers. It's only awarded to those that clearly demonstrate their financial story and with full disclosure, which is extremely important, especially in government today. Some of the items that they review in granting the award is clarity, comparability, completeness, readability, and understandability. It's not just numbers in this report. Frankly, of the 140 pages, there's about 80 pages of narrative. There's about 30 pages that have notes that explain various parts of the financial schedules. There's 22 pages of statistical information that is extremely informative, talks about La Crosse County. It's got all kinds of numbers in there. And then there's the beginning discussion, management discussion and analysis, and also the auditor's opinion. So this is La Crosse County's financial story. It includes about 28 county funds, three major governmental funds, four major business funds, four internal service funds, and then some non-major funds. But if anybody wants a copy, as Steve had said, of the existing report, please see myself, Sharon, Sean, or Michelle. We'd be happy to give you a copy of the existing report. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to contact the Finance Department at any time. Thank you.
Congratulations to the Finance Thanks. Department.
Thanks again, Gary. The next item I'd like to touch on, and we've been spending so much time telling you of events that are coming up, but I do think it's important to highlight. In your agenda packet is the calendar that's coming up, and there are a couple of items that I think are really important to especially new board members, but also previous board members that have come back regarding some of the decisions that we have that you'll be needing to prepare for. In addition to the retreat, you'll end up talking more and more about the law enforcement center. So if you flip over to the back side of that calendar, I want to highlight the next meeting of the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee. Even if you don't serve on that, you may be interested in going to the next meeting because one of the most important issues we're going to be talking about is the LEED standards for sustainability and energy conservation and certification. So next Tuesday, April 22nd, upstairs in room 3220, where we have most of our committee meetings, will be a discussion and presentation by our architect and construction manager and county staff involved in dealing with the evaluation of these LEED standards and whether or not we as a county should pursue that. That will end up hopefully resulting in a recommendation by that committee that will come to the full county board at your May 5th policy planning meeting. So if you're not able to make the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee meeting, the next May 5th policy planning meeting, which is a Monday night, is going to be all entirely on the Law Enforcement Center. The first section that we're going to do is as brief a presentation as we can to bring all board members, especially the new ones, up to speed on the Law Enforcement Center project. Think of it as LEC Expansion 101. It's going to be trying to review where we're at, how we made the decision, the phased-in plan, those kinds of things. So even existing board members should come to that to make sure that we're clear on what we believe the direction from the board is. But we're going to try to do that as briefly as possible with some PowerPoint slides and some foam core boards and some of those kinds of things so that especially the new nine members can really be brought back up to speed on what's happening and that everybody's kind of on the same page. Then we're going to have a complete discussion and consideration and hopefully some decision on whether or not to pursue LEED standards for this new building addition. So, again, we're not going to put anything else on that agenda. We want to make sure that the new board continues to give us direction because we can't slow down on the whole process of the design and analysis that we're moving ahead with the with the Law Enforcement Center addition.
Let me jump in at this point and mention that this is a committee that if you're not on but you want to be on, anybody who is interested in serving on this committee is automatically put on it. We don't have a limited number of members. If all 35 people want to be on it, you're all 35 going to be on it. But on your committee preference sheets, if you want to be a member of the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee, just write it down there and plan to attend the next meeting.
Thank you. And then also below that list are a list of four upcoming collaborations or conference items that you might be interested in. You'll see Cheryl Steffen, who is a Steves County Board Chair Secretary. You'll end up meeting her if you haven't already. She ends up providing all the minutes for each one of our governing committees. She's also the lead as a connection to Steve in talking about who wants to go to what conferences and how that gets arranged and whether or not it fits in the budget. But we always encourage people to try to go to as much of a regional basis with other items that are coming up. Many of you have already signed up for the La Crosse County Collaboration Conference. I don't know if Brian Fukuda is here. I know he did provide this to each and every one of you, and I know many of the new members as well as existing members have signed up. This is the sixth annual collaboration conference and continues on the theme of sustainability and energy conservation and building a better community. In addition to that, Wednesday, April 30th is a Wisconsin Counties Association district meeting. Try to carpool on that. Contact Cheryl. There may be a number of people that are going down. I'm hoping to make it, but if I'm not able to, I know a number of people like to take advantage of meeting other board members, county board members from around the region. I know they're going to be making recommendations for folks that are running for district boards, that type of thing. You get a chance to meet the Wisconsin Counties Association Executive Director and others. It's a great way to learn about being a board member and to share information.
New board members have some information on your desk, and everybody should have in your packets more information. So if you want to take a look at that.
In addition to that, each board member has on their desk a UW Extension Local Government Center County Officials Workshops. That's coming up in two different regional locations that are close by, Richland Center and Eau Claire. Again, contact Cheryl to work on that. But that's a full-day workshop of information on everything from open meetings laws to county budgeting, ethics and conflicts, state-county issues, media relations. Again, it's an example of some of the vital services that UW Extension provides statewide, and it's their local government center that's actually providing that that presentation. Last but not least, even though it's quite a ways off, in October, the Wisconsin County's annual conference is in Wisconsin Dells for the second year in a row. They move it around the state. Sometimes it comes here to La Crosse. I think it's in La Crosse actually the following year. I think next year, isn't it? So if you'd like to go, I know we encourage as many board members as possible to go. Early registration is advised, so please work with Cheryl. She's reserved a block of rooms already. A number of you have already indicated that you're going, but please, if you have a chance, it's a great set of programs, and quite often La Crosse County is specialized in or recognized as one of the groups speaking because of many of the innovative things that we're doing. So there are a lot of things, as well as just to highlight, please keep looking at that calendar and see what's coming up and making sure that we're responsive. Last but not least with my report is to just highlight that on each of your desk is the 2008 budget book that gives you a lot of good program information and that type of background. That's the end of my report, finally, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Mr. O'Malley? All right. That gets us to, we have cards and correspondence back on the bulletin board back there. There are no committee meetings to be held during recess. And Terry Johnson, will you take the chair, please?
Chairman Doyle?
I have four appointments that are listed on the agenda. First is Lauren Cannenberg to the Health and Human Services Board, Audrey Cotter to the Commission on Aging, Bob Mahatka, Commission on Aging, and Pat Bogie, Commission on Aging. I'd ask for approval of those.
Is there a second? Second by Jeff Schrader. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Thank you. Next up is the consent agenda. Move for approval by Mr. Plesha, seconded by Jerry Sobranek. Any questions, comments, changes for the consent agenda? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Next up we have Jeff Blusky from Zoning, Planning, and Land Information. Going to give us a little seminar about how the rezoning and conditional use permit process works. It gets a little complicated, and so before we actually have to start voting on these for the new members, I wanted you to hear how that works. In particular for tonight, we have something that doesn't happen very often, and that is that the legal objectors, which Jeff will explain, for one of the requests on here have filed a petition that meets the particular criteria. So we'll take, for that one to pass, we'll take a three-fourths vote of this board. We don't have that happen a lot, so unfortunately, for your very first meeting, you're going to get to see how this process works. Go for it, Jeff.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Can everybody hear me okay? I, too, would like to welcome the new members to the county board and those that are coming back. Hopefully this isn't too boring for some that have already sat through portions of this and for the ones that are on the committee. This is going to be designed for those lucky persons that are going to be on the committee. So this might make a decision on signing that yellow sheet if you're going to participate on the Planning Resources and Development Committee. As you might know, the county website has a listing of all their code of ordinances. And their code of ordinances are just like the state statutes. I like to refer them to that way because they're the county law. And the zoning code, which happens to be Chapter 17, is one of those 31 codes given to my department to enforce. And we take that very seriously. The last code, I believe it was the Comprehensive Land Use Code, is the Code 31, I believe. It was the last one that was just added. We do work in conjunction with that, so that's something that you will hear us refer to from time to time, too. And this is available if you want to see it word for word on the county's website. I've prepared a little TAN booklet that was probably on top of your budget process, which I consider more important. Mr. O'Malley might think it's not, than the budget, because I deal with this every single day. And this is going to be my presentation. I'd like to do PowerPoints, but because the law isn't something that you can abbreviate very well because it falls under somebody else's opinion. So this booklet was actually put together as a joint process between the Wisconsin County Code Administrators, of which I'm one, the University Extension Office in Waukesha, and by Brian Ohm, who is an assistant professor with the University of Madison. I believe he's on his own now as a private attorney in Madison. So this is not a shortened version. It's almost word for word what's actually in Wisconsin Statute 59, Section 59, which is the county statute, and specifically 59.69, which deals with zoning and land use and our ability to regulate the different classes and zoning districts. The first few pages, 1, 2, 3, 4, are just some preface that indicates how Wisconsin ended up with zoning. We were the first state in the union outside of New York to end up adopt zoning. If you jump to page 5, it says chapter 5, and the pages are listed in the top corners on each page. On page 5, I have highlighted some things that the county general zoning can apply to the unincorporated lands in the county. If the town board approves the application of a general zoning ordinance, it also affects the properties in the separate towns. Now, for some history, this ordinance became effective in 1953, 2 years after I was born. I've been with La Crosse County 33 years. So 33 of the 55 years, and this is the 55th anniversary of this ordinance, for those that like history. But if you take a look at items A through M there, those are the areas that we can actually regulate. And I'm indicating this tonight at the county board's direction, because right after this meeting, you're going to have the opportunity to hear the Planning Resources and Development Committee's report, and it might affect how you vote either for or against one of the petitions. And this is something that comes before this group every single month. The areas within the agriculture, forestry, industry, mining, trades, business, recreation, we can regulate those areas. The areas in which residential uses are regulated and prohibited. And I think you can just read the rest of the list there, but it also deals with everything from building setbacks, building use, single-family, multifamily, commercial uses, wholesale, retail, the industrial district, and naturally the agricultural districts in the county. We also regulate mobile home courts, the zoning of those. At the bottom of page 5, the state law also requires us to adopt the shoreland zoning ordinance. That's a separate ordinance, which deals with areas that fall within 1,000 feet of our lakes, and we have two lakes, Lake Neshonoc and Lake Unalaska, and all lands that fall within 300 feet of a river or a stream. So there's certain conditions that apply there as well. On the top of page 6, we also talk, second paragraph, we talk about a floodplain zoning ordinance. This is something that we just ended up amending for those that are coming back and for the new people. We regulate everything that's in the floodplain through the use of FEMA floodplain maps and what we call flood insurance rate maps. And just so you guys are aware, I may be coming in with another amendment to that ordinance, because I just found out today that the panels that we used were numbered. They should have had a C after the panel numbers, which designates that they're county panels and not city or village panels. We also have ordinances that deal with non-metallic mining and telecommunication facilities or cell towers, the placement of those. Those fall under our jurisdiction. Let's jump to the next few pages up to page 16, deal with how you create a brand new zoning ordinance. Well, we don't have to discuss that because it's already done. But for those new people and the ones that are coming back again, with the passage of our land use plan, we are going to be implementing some changes to the current zoning ordinance. So we're going to be going through a complete rewrite of that. And we've got that on our list of goals to complete this year. So look forward to discussions on that. On page 17, we've got some general principles that deal with how do you make an amendment to this zoning code, this chapter 17. Well, there's two ways to do that. There's text, which is everything that's in the zoning code. That's the words that we're dealing with. But there's also an amendment called changing the map. And every single month, is majority of what we deal with is changing the map. People make a petition with our department. We'll get into that procedure on page 18. But they're requesting to take their property from, let's say, an agricultural use to a residential use, or maybe a commercial or industrial use. That takes an application. But there's two different kinds. There's one that's called general and one that's specific. and each one can be amended. Some of the amendments affect a wide range of uses, and I'm going to give you an example there. The town of Campbell tried to incorporate and become a village a few years back, and they didn't have sufficient enough amount of area in which to grow into. Most of their property was zoned Agricultural District A, which indicated that the lots had to be 20,000 square feet. Well, under the Residential A District, you only have to have 10,000 square feet. So they decided that if they could split those lots in half somehow with Residential A zoning, they would have an area to increase. That's one type of general zoning. The other type is about 90% of, or maybe 95% of what we see, where it just affects one specific piece of property, but affects a lot of property owners on the perimeter of the parcel. Third or second paragraph from the bottom, it naturally indicates that zoning amendments that change land use can upset landowners. Well, naturally, that's something that's going to happen, because with every single petition, there's going to be somebody that's in favor of the petition, like the property owner, but there's going to be some that might be opposed to it, and that might be some of the adjacent property owners or somebody that's in competition with the commercial business that's going in. So it's very contentious when it gets to the public hearing stage. And as county board supervisors, you will receive a notice of something that's going to happen in your district. So you might get phone calls. So we're alerting you to the fact that something might happen, and you might get a phone call regarding that. Once you get that, if you want to come down and check the files, you can get the specifics on it. Otherwise, refer the calls to us.
Jeff, can you explain that people in the city will not be getting those?
Yes. The two cities and the four villages in La Crosse County will not get that information unless your supervisory district goes outside the boundaries of your specific village or city. And I think the city of La Crosse supervisors are, those districts are what we call all coterminous. I don't think they go outside the city limits at all. But if you're representing the city of Onalaska, Holman, the village of Bangor, West Salem, or Rockland, and you got an area that takes in one of the townships, you will get a notice on that. So that's a very good point. On page 18, this is the procedure that any property owner has to go through in order to amend this book again, and that's the map that we were referring to. Second paragraph indicates that it has to begin with somebody filing an application for an amendment. This county board sets the fees for those every single year, and that cost is not cheap. It's $372. So we indicate to the property owner through some papers that they have to fill out that they have to also do an impact statement, because you're actually taking your property and its use to a higher use, which also creates a higher valuation, and that should not be taken lightly. So you have to do your homework. At the bottom of that paragraph, it indicates that these are the four parties that can actually file a petition. It can be the property owner, naturally. It could be the town board of any town where the ordinance is in effect. In La Crosse County, all 12 townships are participating with our ordinance. And number three, any member of the county board, if they feel there should be a zoning amendment, can make the application. Or, number four, the County Plan Commission, which is the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee. So there's certain criteria in the zoning ordinance that would indicate and help people through that process, and that's what we're there for, to give the people advice. A lot of people, when they come in, and they might not want to make the application right away, but we sit down, we give them a lot of advice of what the consequences are of taking their property to a higher use, including contacting your adjacent neighbors. The next paragraph indicates that the county clerk must refer the petition immediately. Well, that's what the state statute says. Somehow my zoning staff gets deputized every single year to do that for the county clerk, and we do that very graciously. Wherever it refers to the county clerk, it's also our department. And where it says County Plan Commission, that would be the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee. So one of our jobs is to notify each member of the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee when an application has been made. We also know the County Board Supervisor of the affected area, which I've already mentioned. And the final job then is to make a report of the results of that petition to you, the County Board. So we'll get into the meat of this very quickly here, and we should be done with this in about 10 minutes. Upon receipt of that referral, the work of the Planning Commission and my office begins. This includes scheduling and holding a public hearing. Now, it's very important because one of the actions that you took tonight was indicating that the County Board has to meet or is going to meet the third Thursday of every single month. Well, when I have to take all the Class 2 notices into account, I have to notify the town boards 10 days prior to the meeting. It sets a lot of things in motion, so we are required to meet three Mondays before the third Thursday. And we have that set, I think, in maybe in the county board rules, but it's for a reason. And I think every other committee might be affected by that date. So it not only includes the scheduling, holding the public hearing, we have to send communications, and they have to send back from the town boards. The making of the recommendation with my staff, because we have a lot of pieces of information that we have to communicate to the planning or the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee. And after the County Board or the Planning Commission holds the public hearing, we have to put this County Board report together, and that's what you're going to hear after I'm done. There's going to be some County Board reports. Next paragraph indicates that the calling of the hearing requires the commission to choose a date and to publish a Class 2 notice. This is something that's very expensive because our local newspaper charges by the inch. And we have to publish as much as we can because, and that's for a reason, because we send notices out to everybody within 300 feet of the subject that's going to be rezoned. Now, the public hearing notice, the one that gets the Class 2 notice in our legal newspaper, is for everybody else that's not notified. Now, normally when we send a notice, when you get it in the mail, that means the town board has got it in the mail. That means the property owners have gotten it in the mail. That means it's in the La Crosse Tribune for everybody to discover. That's going to send a chain reaction out to the rest of the community. Do you know this is going to happen? You know, so it does travel like wildfire. That's why we indicate to the people that are going to petition or subject to the application have to contact their adjacent neighbors so they don't find it out secondhand and say, well, I already heard it's going to be something else. So you want to hear it from the person that's making the application. So again, we indicate to that to the petitioner, and we indicate that whatever you tell the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee, you have to tell the town board. The two have to hear the same story. If you're going to tell one, it's going to get back to our committee. And they're going to have a dispute, and it's not going to be resolved sometimes at the meeting, which means if it's got to be referred back for more input, they have to pay the $372 again. So we tell them this all up front. They have to do their homework. So a copy of the notice is sent to the commission or to the clerk of each of the affected towns by registered mail, another expense. But we have to do that to make sure that they did receive it because some towns indicate, well, we never got it. Well, we got the receipt back. The notice should also be sent to the petitioner and to the owners of record. Now, the state statutes indicate that we only have to go to the adjacent neighbors. Now, we go to 300 feet because, as the chairman has indicated, tonight we have a protest petition. And by identifying everybody within 300 feet, we already have the names of those people that, if they signed a valid protest petition, the husband, the wife, everybody that owns title has to sign that petition in order to make their name for that particular address valid. So if just the husband signs it and the wife doesn't, we throw that name out. It's an invalid because you have to have everybody that owns title to that. So we've already checked that out. And then it goes on to say, these landowners have protest petition rights. and we'll get into that in another section that's coming up. Next paragraph indicates that the committee then proceeds to conduct and close the public hearing. There's a vote upon a recommendation to the county board. The recommendation is either to approve the petition. These are the only valid ways that this thing can be passed. The recommendation is either to approve the petition as submitted, can modify and approve the application, and we do have one of those tonight, or to disapprove or deny the petition. Those are the only examples of recommendations to the county board. If the committee's recommendation is to approve or modify and to approve the amendment, now the amendment is the map amendment in this case, the commission must cause an ordinance to be drafted. So the petitions or the reports to the county board are those ordinances that you're going to be dealing with. So we're one of the few committees that every single month we amend our ordinance. If the commission recommends denial of the petition, the commission must report its recommendation and the reasons for that recommendation to deny to the county board. And I think we might have one of those in there tonight, too. In addition to the committee's recommendation, the county board must have proof of the publication of the notice, that Class 2 notice that went in the paper. I'm on the page top of page 19 right now. Proof of the mailing of the notices to the town clerks. We do have one town clerk here tonight, Marilyn. She signs that receipt, sends it back to us. We stick that in our folder. And notices of any town board resolutions, either in support or in denial. Before the county board votes on the recommendations, it should inquire about the positive and negative effects from the affected town boards or protest petitions, as I'm going to get into. So the next white or yellow area indicates that the town has veto power over the county zoning amendment. Now, the short of that is because the town boards are participating, they have statutory right to disapprove and reject any amendments. Now, one of our rules of thumb is it takes two yeses in order to pass, one yes from the township and one yes from the committee. The recommendation to this full county board should be then to approve. If the committee says no and the town says yes, the recommendation is no. Or if the town says yes and the committee says no, the recommendation is going to be no. But the county board can do just about anything they please. They can indicate and veto that and indicate where the town has said no, they could pass it. But in this case, the town has final authority after we send them notice that the county board has approved that over their veto power. The town has 40 days to say, what part of this didn't you understand? We're saying no one more time. And then that stands. Now, since the county board and the committee and everybody that's involved in the process like to collaborate with the municipalities, it behooves us to go along with any recommendations that they have. But you're going to find out there are a lot of times when we disagree. The committee might feel strongly enough that this should happen, even though the town has said no. And the reasons you're always going to find in the minutes. I don't know if the minutes have been talked about yet in orientation, but you're going to find out our minutes are one of the longest. And that's for a reason, because every single case that we do can be appealed to circuit court. It can go to the appeals court and then to the state Supreme Court. And if I had to ask our corporation counsel how many times we've had a case appealed, we could probably do it on one hand. I think we had one case that did go to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and it was a real close decision, but we still won. So we do everything for a reason. We keep the files open to the public. There's a lot of people that do come in and want copies of that information because they don't like to contact the petitioner. So everything that we have is open to the public. In the case of the towns are required to have a reply to us, and the state statutes indicates that that reply in approval does not have to come in the form of writing. They can call us. We indicate that we'd like to have that for the record, so we have some kind of a date or something in our file that they did pass us. whether it's a copy of the minutes or if they did it by resolution. However, if the town board rejects or denies the petition, it is required that we receive that action within 10 days of the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee meeting. And that's very, very important, because if they miss that 10 days and they veto it on the 11th day, it does not count. The statutes go on to indicate that if the towns don't feel that they can react within 10 days, they can pass another resolution that asks for a 30-day extension. Three towns have done that: the town of Campbell, the town of Burns, and the town of Onalaska. They like to meet more toward the end of the month, and with the land use plans in place in those, in two of those communities, they've got another meeting that they filter the application through, and that's their local plan commission. So on the top of page 20, second paragraph, the county board receives the committee's recommendations and a notice of the town board resolutions. Assuming that the veto resolutions are received and a negative recommendation has been made by the plan commission, the county board will probably vote to concur with a negative recommendation. This kills the petition. Our ordinance indicates that, and for a reason, that once it's denied, you can't bring it back for another year. The reason for that is in the past history indicates that these people would come back in the following month and the following month and the following month trying to wear the neighborhood down. So when we decided to change the text in the ordinance, we held a public hearing on that, and they thought 1 year was long enough. So we also allow a process, and you're going to, something we're going to hear next month is, the petitioner has the ability to withdraw their application if it looks like things are going bad, if things are going to go sour for them, and let them regroup, rethink about what their application says, then they can bring it in the following month. Okay, the last item that I have before the county board action is on page 20, about halfway down, is the protest petition. Something very, very important. We probably get, if we're lucky, one protest petition a year. A protest petition is a document objecting to a rezoning signed by owners of the lands proposed to be rezoned or by the owners of lands abutting the lands proposed to be rezoned. Now, this is not double talk, so if you're not following along, listen closely. The protest petition is a written statement signed and acknowledged by the owners of the property proposed to be rezoned or by the owners of the abutting property. To be an effective protest petition, the lands owned by the signers must make up 50% or more of the abutting lands to be rezoned, or must be over 50% of the total perimeter of the area located within 300 feet of the proposed rezone. The protest petition must be received by the county clerk at least 24 hours prior to the start of this meeting, to the date of the county board meeting, at which the board is to consider the report of the plan commission on the proposed amendment. The county clerk should bring this. The zoning office does too. It depends on who they bring it to, but we always send it down to the county clerk. Should bring this petition to the attention of the county board. A determination must be made as to whether the petition is legally sufficient, and that's the job of the zoning staff. Ownership facts, area and perimeter facts must be verified, and the date and receipt must be reviewed. The responsibility rests on the board to accomplish this check. The board can check this before, during, or after the board meeting by the officers, staff, or may refer the matter back to the plan commission for a report on the authenticity of the ownership statements. After the board receives the report on the legal sufficiency, it can proceed. If the petition is found to be valid, the proposed rezoning must be adopted by the affirmative vote of 3/4 of the county board members present and voting. So 3/4 of those present tonight would have to pass that, rather than a simple majority on the rest of them. If the petition is found to be untrue to the extent that the required footage or ownership is not present, the protest will be disregarded. County board action. This is the final steps. Having reviewed the question of the town veto, protest petitions, the county board is now ready to react on the report of the planning or the Planning Resources and Development Committee. The county board reaches the proposed amendment by working through its agenda, and you'll hear that from the acting chairman tonight, through its agenda to the point of the report from the committee. The next paragraph is the important steps. The county board may enact the recommended ordinance drafted by the committee. It may enact the ordinance with amendments, or it may deny the petition for amendment, or refuse to deny the petition as recommended by the plan or the Planning Resources and Development Committee. Under the last alternative, the board must re-refer the petition to the plan committee with directions to draft an ordinance consistent with the petition and to report it back to a county board action at a future date. Re-referral does not bind the county board to pass it at a later date, but it brings another ordinance before the board at a later date. This procedure takes place within the operating rules and customs of the county board meeting. Referring back, the next paragraph, the matter of amending a protest or proposed zoning ordinance amendment by the county board raises several questions. One question is whether an amendment so significantly alters the proposed amendment as to warrant a recycling back through the various notice and hearing steps. The county zoning statutes do not mandate such recycling. It's important to make a good faith effort to keep all the parties comprised of this. So, I guess with that, that's zoning and how you petition and the process that it ends up running through. The pages that follow this, I would take home and read rather than going to Sloopy's. I really would. So, with that, I would entertain any questions.
Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff, why don't you touch on the meeting they have on the Thursday prior to the Monday meeting? It's something we've implemented 15 years ago.
Okay.
And very invite good. Other supervisors, too, to attend that.
Okay. Supervisor Spiker has indicated a real decent point here. The Thursday prior to the third Monday, the Planning Resources and Development Committee meets and goes on tour to view each one of these sites. And we've considered this a very important portion of the duties of the committee for one simple reason. If you do not take a look at the site and make a picture in your mind's eye by seeing the traffic that's on the site, what the road looks like, what the site looks like, it could be wet, it could be steep, there's all kinds of things, how close the neighbors are, because once you get to that meeting and the committee is sitting up here and the audience is out here, it's hard to picture in your mind's eye if the person that's standing right in the middle giving testimony is really telling the truth. Because you've got the pros and you've got the cons out there, and sometimes some people will stretch it just a little bit. So the committee has the power to answer them back and say, well, you know, I think when we were out there, we saw this. Well, that corrects the minutes and everything else that, you know, they use. Now, another very important part of this is, and this is the reason for keeping very strict minutes, is because if there is an appeal, the only thing that the courts can use is the testimony that this committee had heard. You can't bring in anything else from the outside. If it wasn't read into the record, if it wasn't testified for them to make a judgment on, either yes, we will support this or no, we won't, it has to be heard during that meeting. So if the thing gets denied and somebody brings something in 2 days later and said, boy, I wish I would have known I could, you know, can I present this now? No, it's done. You've got the opportunity to contact the county board supervisor when it hits this to have it referred back. That's a challenge for all of you to accept something like that, but that's something that you're going to have to weigh yourselves. So I guess with that.
Other questions for Jeff? All right. Thank you, Jeff. Oh, Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, remember last year, I think you sent us a nice big matrix, decision-making matrix, in terms of what happens. I don't know if you can give us that again.
I certainly can.
Or at least the new board members.
Sure, I'll do that.
That would be helpful.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Other questions or comments for Jeff? Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right, now people are going to see what Jeff talked about in action. Tom Rauch is going to present the items for the Planning, Resource, and Development Committee. What he will be doing is reading what the committee did and then making a motion for the board to approve the committee report. What that means is you're asked to either agree with or disagree with what the committee recommended. And I need to make sure you understand that. Sometimes the committee report will be, yes, approve the petition. Okay, fine. If you are in favor of the petition, you vote yes. Sometimes the committee report will be to deny the petition. In that case, your yes means a no and your no means a yes. I will point those out to you when we get to that point because it gets a little confusing sometimes. But what you're voting on when these issues come up is, do you agree with our committee or not? You're not, strictly speaking, voting for approve or not approve the petition. Do you agree with or don't agree with the committee report? Having said that, Mr. Rauch, you're up.
I can't believe this. My first try at this is acting chair, and we now have 34 new experts on this whole, and I don't know. Okay,
there you go.
I'm going to do my best. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have item number 12/4, conditional use permit number 773, submitted by David Harder for Harder Trucking, to establish a tree nursery with limited viewing, pickup, delivery, and maintenance of trees on 4.14 acres of land on Hauser Road on the land that is zoned Ag District A but is regulated as residential. Before I proceed with the recommendation, I will make a comment for those who may try to follow us in the minutes of the committee. This was referred to in the minutes, the last minutes of the committee meeting, because it met the public hearing a month ago, but the town had not yet reviewed it, and so it was deferred to this year, this month's committee meeting. The committee recommended approval with 9 conditions, 6 of those which we had put on in our public hearing, and 3 additional ones which the town of Alaska added along with their concurrence. And so, Mr. Chair, I move the committee report.
Mr. Rauch moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to 9 conditions. Is there a second? Seconded by Jeff Schrader. Discussion or questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. See, that wasn't so tough, right?
Oh, well, we could move right along here. Item 13/4 is petition number 1775 by Kay and Donald Wimberly of County Road F, La Crosse, to rezone some traditional agricultural district land, 10.2 acres, to Agriculture District A in order to sell the land and to establish one single-family residence. The committee unanimously recommends approval, and I move the committee report.
Mr. Rauch moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Andrea Richmond. Is there any discussion, questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have item 14-4, petition number 1776, to amend the zoning ordinance filed by Russell and Carol Bringy of County Road M in Holman to rezone from Agricultural District B to Exclusive Agricultural District some land in the town of Onalaska and the town of Hamilton. And the committee recommends unanimously to approve. And I will add the comment from the minutes. The minutes said that they had not at the public hearing heard from the town of Hamilton nor from the town of Onalaska. Both towns have now responded to us that they concur with no additional conditions, and so I move the committee approval to approve.
Mr. Rauch moves the committee report, which is to approve. Is there a second? Second by Leon Paff. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have item 15/4, petition number 1777, to amend the La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Alan Poser on behalf of La Crosse Queen LLC on Marina Drive, La Crosse, to rezone residential districts A and C properties to commercial district B. This is recommended by the committee for approval on a vote of 5 in favor and 2 opposed to rezone all three parcels. This proposal, this petition was sent to us with all three parcels in one petition. The committee recommendation is to rezone to conditional commercial District B zoning with the seven conditions shown on the petition, and we move for approval.
Mr. Out moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to seven conditions. Is there a second? Seconded by Jeff Schrader. Discussion. This is the one that referred to that has the objectors that filed their protest petition. In order for this one to pass, it will take a three-fourths vote of the members who vote. So if you abstain, it doesn't count. If you're not here tonight, it doesn't count. The three-fourths of those who are voting would need to vote yes on this one. That isn't how it read in here. It said present and voting. Oh, so if you are voting, if you're abstaining, it's considered to be a vote? Oh, okay, well then, ignore what I said because I'm usually wrong anyway. Takes three-fourths of everybody who's here. How's that? Discussion. Mr. Mina.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. To start off, this wasn't a bad proposal, but the only problem some of us had was the fact that the two parcels on the other side of Bainbridge, which included two parcels that they were going to make into parking lots, was not in the town plan. And that became a sort of a problem only because we did pass a new comprehensive plan, which basically says we should have the town having some of these things in their plan. And it was pointed out at the meeting that there will be a delay whether you approve this or not. If you approve it, there will be a delay of, I think Charlie Handy said, about 45 days, so that the town has to revise their plan prior to this being implemented. And I think we need to figure out our due process on any of these that come up before the county board in the future. If the petition is not in the town plan, then we are going to be talking about this that's pending who gets on zoning committee for next month. But we will be talking about this if the people on the zoning committee want to, or they're going to suggest some changes here, and there got to be some changes. Because the town has to have it in their plan. Otherwise, they got to revise the plan, go through the public hearing, and all of that. So that is the reason why I, as one, voted against it, because two of the parcels were not in the plan.
Before we go on to the next person to discuss this, I'm going to ask Jeff to borrow the tripod from our architects. And you showed me the map before the meeting. A lot of people don't know exactly where we're talking or what we're talking here, and I think if you see the map, that will help. You've got it in there, but it's kind of small. Jeff has it in color, which I think will help you a little bit, so I'm going to ask him while we're discussing this to put that up, and if you can't see it and you want to come up, feel free to do that and get a closer look so that you know what we're talking about here. Continue discussion, Mr. Ebert.
Pretend like I'm at a Duxton living a day.
He's funny. That should be up on the screen, actually.
That are across the street from Skipper Liner, and then the other one for both parking lot is right here.
Jim, I have to let him show what's going on.
Okay. Huck Finn's is down on this corner right on the water along with the marina right here.
Can we
hold it up a little higher?
If you're down, take a step back.
Okay. This is where Skipper Liner manufactures their houseboats. What's going to end up happening out here is Skipper Liner and Huck Finn's are going to have the Island Girl dock down here somewhere, and they need the overflow parking in these three areas here. Currently, these are zoned residential, and they have a home on each one that's being rented. There's a home on this site that's going to be torn down. That one evidently in the town plan right now as commercial, but the legal objectors signed on three sides of that one as well. So the original question was what again? I kind of forgot.
The two parcels were not in the town plan.
Yes. These two parcels right here were not up to become commercial pieces of property. Only this one here was. So in the last recommendation, which I think is, can I flip your page here? Number seven indicates that the town plan has to be amended prior to these two becoming commercial. So when the town holds their land use hearing all over again to amend their land use plan, if it doesn't pass, they don't become rezoned. It's just that simple. If they pass it, when that information is sent to our department, then we change our maps. The map is amended at that time. That's basically it. Okay?
Neither of those guys.
And this is for sale for $100.
Neither of those guys bears the slightest resemblance to Vanna White, I would note. Mr. Ebert, you still have the floor.
Yes. Who are the protesters, and where is their property on here?
There's a machine called Elmo here that I could put this on, but I don't think it works in conjunction with the voting machine. I'm going to hold up this map here. Here's the three parcels again, the two lots across the street and the other one that's... Can you see that back there, Joe, Marilyn? Okay. Everything that's in pink is the piece of property that's adjacent, where an adjacent property owner has signed. So everybody that signed makes up 55.25%. So they are over 50% of the adjacent property owners. You want me to walk around with that?
Sign, you say they signed in protest or signed for?
They signed in protest. This is the results of the protest petition. Everything that's in pink?
Is that red lines you mean?
Yeah, the yellow inside the red.
The yellow are the three pieces of property subject to the rezoning. The lines in pink is the parcels that were adjacent on the perimeter.
So, Jeff, is that the Gaineses would be one of the
yes.
protesters?
Yes.
And who's, and then Mitchler, Piper?
Okay, if you want me to read them off, E.T. Piper, which was just north of the parcel by itself, there's an Anderson, a Schultz, and another Schultz over here that had signed. Since Skipper Liner owns the land in between, we jump across them because they're within 300 feet. They're legal objectors. Across the street, we have Kevin Mahoney. Directly across the street is Jenna Anthony. Down in the middle parcel, we've got a William and Carla Gaines. They objected. And on the parcel just to the on the bottom is a Kathleen and Brian Gaines. Now, Kathleen signed that as by herself, but her husband Brian passed away, I think it was last year. So we took his name off.
Mr. Ebert, are you done?
So do we have to vote on this as all three parcels, or can we split it?
You can't split it.
So an amendment to split would not be in order, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not.
Is that it for you, Mr. Ebert?
Thank you.
Brad Paff.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Blusky, a number of people obviously have spoken in opposition to this. I see in the minutes 21 people signed a petition. I also understand that there's another petition that they has been brought forward. Is that true or not?
No, haven't seen one yet.
All right. Is this property in the floodplain?
The parcel to the north, a portion of it is. It's mapped that way right now for a majority of the Skipper Liner Industries properties, but they have a special exception permit from our committee that allowed them to fill that in, but they have not taken that back to FEMA to have it taken out.
So they do not have a FEMA special exemption permit?
No.
Okay. I see there's a recommendation for adequate drainage. Since this is in a floodplain, how do you recommend they go about doing adequate drainage?
during the flood, there won't be any operation out there anyway. And just so the members of the county board know, open space uses are something that are allowed in the floodplain.
Regarding public safety, is there a calling for a widening of the streets?
The widening?
Well, is there called for a widening, excuse me, of the street?
No.
There is not.
The town of Campbell did not bring that up. I know some of the people in the neighborhood had called me because they were kind of concerned about, well, if there's not enough parking proposed on these parcels, is there going to be off-street parking? Well, that's something that the town allows everywhere. Certainly you can park on the street. Well, that's something that the local taxpayers out there, the residential owners, can weigh in signing the protest petition if they don't want to see that additional traffic out there.
Right.
But if these two parcels aren't used for parking, can they park out there anyway? Yes.
Ed Van Yule spoke at your committee in opposition.
Yes.
In Mr. Van Yule's comments, he stated that there's 12,000 trucks annually drive on this street to get to the Cargill grain elevator. Is that factually correct?
I couldn't answer that, but South Bainbridge, which runs south of Clinton Street, does have the new Cargill granary, which was moved from where the logistics building was down here. They do a lot of truck traffic. Plus, Brennan Dredging is down there, too, and NSP.
All right.
Or Excel.
And Mr. Van Yule here also comments regarding noise, lights, and traffic, and local streets are narrow with no curbs and no sidewalks. Roads are used for walking, bicycling. So, again, those are some comments from the people. I guess my last comment on this is it's in the floodplain. FEMA has not signed off on anything yet. There are some public safety concerns. But the recommendation of your department is to approve this. Could you explain why?
Again, the open use for something like this, because you'll notice that we not only place conditional zoning on this for commercial, because right now the traffic that's on that parcel are the renters of both pieces of property, or I should say all three pieces of property. So when we get something like this, and it's going to be an open use, such as parking, which isn't allowed use in the floodplain, we see this as something that would end up being compatible. The safety issue, which we felt that they they had indicated that, sure, there's going to be some people that are going to try and walk the street there that aren't going to take the little golf cart that they're going to have out there to pick the people up and take them down to the boat and take them back. There's going to be some people that are just going to want to walk back. There are no sidewalks on either sides of the street on this thing either. So does that happen in any other neighborhood? Well, certainly it does. As far as the number of vehicles that are going to be on each one of these sites, I mean, if it's a slow day at the Huck Finn's or at the marina, they'll probably get enough in there. So it's just one of those things that we as a staff had to end up taking a real close look at and say, it's not going to be harmful. But if I was in the neighborhood, would I probably have an objection over a lot of people parking that normally wouldn't park there? Probably yes. You know, the Al Poser, who had proposed this in acting on behalf of Skipper Liner, did contact all the property owners. And that's why they entered into the application. Well, after the public hearing, the people didn't like what they heard, evidently, so they decided to do the protest petition, which they can do. So on the face, everything looks fine, but in the neighborhood, it's not. So the town land use plan right now. I guess I can add things that were said that are in the minutes. The town planning commission had indicated that this area should be commercial. They did discuss it, but it just didn't get changed. The consultant said the same thing that was working with the town of Campbell. So if that's the case, and all these people show up at the next proposed land use change meeting, are they going to change it? I have no idea of knowing.
Can property be rezoned if to commercial if it is in a floodplain?
Yes.
Yes. And can it have surface parking then?
Yes.
Blacktop surface parking or
that's
something?
That's an open use. It doesn't end up restricting the flow.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. Tom Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's a couple of points that would be useful to keep in mind as we discuss this item. First of all, it is that La Crosse Queen LLC actually already owns those three properties. They're renting out the houses that are on those properties, but they do already own them. So whether we approve or deny this, it does not change the ownership of those properties. That's not what's under discussion. My second point would be that the La Crosse Queen will be moving their operations of that ship to this area. They had to leave the other location. So they are going here, and the ship will operate from here. And it seems to me that the question can focus on the issue of where the parking for their customers will be. Either these properties be rezoned as requested and the parking be focused in these three locations, and for sure the customers and the employees of this operation are all going to prefer to park as close as possible. So parking out on the other side of Bainbridge will be the last resort when there are a significant number of customers to those facilities, not just the ship but the restaurant also. So then the question is, will the parking be focused onto these three parking lot areas, or will the parking for all the customers of those, to the extent that it overflows beyond Bainbridge, in fact exist wherever the customers wanted to park, on the street, in front of people's yards, or wherever, and walking from whatever direction across Bainbridge to get over to the restaurant or to the ship as they intend to be customers? And so to me, it can boil down to, do we want to approve the focused parking, or do we want to permit them on-street parking wherever they choose to, which is permitted right now under existing conditions? Thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Jeff said, I sat on that the local planning commission over there, and it was an oversight that the whole area wasn't rezoned to commercial in the first place. And as Mr. Rauch so pointed out so well, that these, as Jeff said, these all have to be taken at one time. Isn't that right, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
The piece of land that they're really concerned about is the one on the same side of the street as Skipper Liner, be directly to the north. This is going to be vital to their operation, because the Island Girl is going to be docking there, and I don't know how many people that thing holds, but potentially, you know, there's going to be 30 or 40 more cars. And whether the cars would actually be parking across the street in those other two lots, they don't even really know. And if it were me, I live on French Island, I would much rather see somebody parking in those lots and up and down the streets, which those streets are very narrow, running east and west there. It would in much less inhibit the traffic flow. And also they have, I believe, gone to great lengths to ensure that these entrances and exits to these parking lots will have good visibility. So those are some things to weigh when you make your decision, I think. Thank you.
Andrea Richmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a correction for Supervisor Rauch. That is the Island Girl, not the La Crosse Queen. The La Crosse Queen will be at Riverside Park. but I feel this is very disruptive to the neighborhood. And I had a question for Mr. Blesky. Will that parking lot be paved, and is there any pilot payment in lieu of taxes on that?
There's no payment in lieu of taxes, and the three parking lots will be paved. They're indicating that the first one, that they'd be tearing down on the east side of Bainbridge and putting in pavement that would be directed toward the storm sewer outlet. I think it's at the northeast corner of that intersection. It's already a storm sewer outlet right there.
Do you require a pilot in other areas at all?
No.
Okay.
That's not in our ordinance.
Pardon me?
That's not in our ordinance.
Okay. I just think that being that so narrow, it will be a traffic nightmare, and being the Island Girl has anywhere from 60 to 100 plus people on those boats probably three times a day on weekends especially. I'm going to oppose this. Thank you.
I have a question. I don't know if it would be for Andrea or for Jeff. The payment in lieu of taxes, they would still be paying taxes on this, right?
Oh, sure.
But your question relates because of the...
If it's parking, if it's a parking lot.
But it would be less than if there was a structure
correct.
On it. Is that the nature of your question?
Okay. Yes,
thank you. All right. Maureen Friedland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. I'm looking at the letter addressed to the Zoning Board from Terry Bartles, and he asks the question of why doesn't the skipper liner use the land across the bay to the east for the Island Girl and parking. Can you explain, please, what other options skipper liner might have besides these parcels, if there are any?
If you remember on the aerial photo, and that would be something nice to show everybody on the screen, but to the south of Huck Finn's and to the south of where the houseboats are actually constructed is a row of parking that's adjacent to the marina itself. And those marina spaces, those parking spaces, are for the occupants of the houseboats and cruisers that are there. South of that row that's adjacent to Huck Finn's, across the bay, is another row of parking that's been reserved for the people that have slips or dock spaces right there. Now, the other option, which we haven't discussed with them, is going farther south down the street on the east side of South Bainbridge Street is some land that is zoned industrial, and you'll see that that's everything in the dotted area. There is an area down there, a portion of that they already own along with Brennan, and that's where the salt and the Cargill docks and silos are. Naturally, they've got that option to go and rent some land from them, but that didn't come out as an option. I'm sorry.
Ms. Friedland, is that the end of your questions? Audrey Cotter.
Thank you. I want to go back to the floodplain issue, and being somewhat familiar with the area up there, it seems to me that the houses across the street, in the event that they were going to be rebuilt, they would not be allowed to rebuild unless they put a considerable amount of fill in there.
That's correct. Because although a majority of them homes, and I'm probably going to say 98% of the homes that are in that area existed prior to the zoning ordinance and prior to the floodplain zoning, which went into effect in 1985. And if you look at these lots, these are very narrow lots. Most of these lots are either 40 or 60 feet wide, with the exception of some that have purchased two or three lots. Some of the people in that neighborhood, because we've issued permits on them, have stuck anywhere between 40 and 60,000 worth of new construction on them as well. In order to floodproof the homes, you have to have 15 feet of fill around the perimeter of the house. And if you don't, if you stick in more than 50% of the value, most of these homes don't have basements either, by the way, but you would have to have an engineered floodproof basement constructed in order to take you out of the floodplain.
That's what you know, I think is a factor to be considered in relation to this. I've got very mixed feelings in it because I hate to see a neighborhood starting to be eroded with taking away it could almost be like a cancer to a degree the way these things happen. But yet, on the other hand, looking at the fact that it is commercial and it's actually... It's not very attractive commercial across the way other than the skipper liner business. The rest of it's pretty ho-hum, to say the least of it. But that is kind of... it's too bad that the town didn't originally put those areas as commercial and look to filling them, bringing them out of the floodplain. So... I could argue it both directions, but the other thing that I think is critically important in the event that this is supported is that there is landscaping and to help to upgrade it. And looking towards the storm sewer requirements that we're all going to have to meet, the blacktopping, I would hope, would be done with a view to including rain gardens in addition to the landscaping. You did mention earlier that they would flow it towards the storm sewer, but that's not really sufficient, is it?
Again, when I gave my presentation on the different ordinances that we have, the shoreline zoning is one of them. And for the parcel that's on the east side of Bainbridge, they've already gone through the special exception permit to tear the house down and do filling and grading and blacktopping of that surface there. Will they do that without the zoning? Maybe not. Maybe they'll just tear the house down. They said the house was beyond repair. So, but that's on the same side of the street. So I can't answer how they're going to end up reacting to this if it doesn't happen. I'm sure that they'll go, you know, 100 miles an hour in the direction to get it done as the event or their opening ends up happening, but I can't speculate there. I can't. But our land conservation department, each of these three sites would require an erosion control permit, so nothing is drained toward the water. And that's where we come, the 300 feet in the shoreline district. So the two lots on the west side of Bainbridge Street do not fall within our shoreline district, but they'll still require erosion control permits. For the runoff.
Thank you.
Don Vina.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason probably why we're debating this at longer length is, well, because it's three-quarter vote needed. But after the meeting that we had in PDR, I was asked by Mike to talk to him a little bit. And, Jeff, you weren't at the meeting. I don't know. You were either on vacation or something. I'm not sure. But anyhow.
Rhode Island.
Oh, that sounds like a good deal. Well, anyhow, the problem as I see it, and we need to resolve that with the PDR committee or anyone else that has any suggestions about how we should do this, because we passed a comprehensive plan, and the plan says that the town is supposed to do certain things in their township and put their plan together. And in this case, they did put a plan together. Even though the people at that meeting did say that they should have considered something else. So it's not a sticky issue, but we're going to have more of these sticky issues as the requests for rezoning come up, and they are not in the town plan. How should these be handled is the big question in my mind, and that's why I talked to Mike about it. And we have it on the agenda for next month. I asked that it be put on so we could discuss this, because the word was that your department did get a lot of political flack on this, both ways. And here's the big issue. Shouldn't that political flack start at the local level, because that's their plan? Well, shouldn't we require the townships to revise their plan first before they come in with a petition? Or should we take their petitions and then each one of us on the committee and yourself as a department catch a lot of flack from each one of these people who have now signed the petition. And we need to clarify that real quickly, because the more people we have come in with a petition that is requesting something that the town plan does not have in, we're going to get a lot of flack. And we're going to start, as committee members, getting phone calls. And I don't know if that's the right way to go. I think what we ought to do is to request the town to go through their public hearing, revise their plan, and if it gets a revised, you know, then we should consider it. But that is an issue for the next meeting, and I don't know. What do you think about it? I was just going to ask your opinion about, have you formed an opinion about how we should handle these, not only this one, but any other one that is not in the town plan?
And I'm sure Jeff will be happy to answer that when that issue is before us. We need to stay on the topic here, Don. We're going on pretty long way. That is a more global issue. But we do want to hear from you someday, Jeff.
But it is on the agenda, and that's the proper place to set a policy. Yes.
Yep. Jill Billings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to the specific zoning change in front of us. I have to side with the neighbors on this, so I'm going to vote no. I understand the arguments that this was meant to be commercial, maybe originally in the plan, the Campbell plan, but that would have given the neighbors at that point a chance to argue, and it could have been, who knows how that would have gone. It might have gone commercial, it might not have. They didn't get that chance because it wasn't in that original plan. The second item was that because Skipperliner bought this property on speculation, that's supposed to somehow give weight toward how we zone this, and I would have to disagree with that. You know, businesses can buy property on speculation, and they're taking the risk. They're not guaranteed a zoning change. I can't imagine being a neighbor here and having, it seems like they don't mind Skipperliner across the way, but it's different when you have a cocktail cruise and a restaurant with parking here. I can't imagine parking for a bar or people having cocktails. In my neighborhood, I would not be happy about that at all. And these people have lived here longer than Skipperliner. And the fact that I read in the minutes someone saying that, you know, garbage trucks go by or some of the housing is deteriorated. But other people put money into these houses, and they have a right to not have property values go down. So I'm sympathetic with them for holding the line at Bainbridge. I would probably agree to the parking lot across the way, and I would hope that Skipperliner could come out with another plan to have parking on their side of Bainbridge and not creep into these neighborhoods.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I needed clarification of was What part here was forgotten in the comprehensive plan? Just two little lots were forgotten? I mean, forgotten in what way? They remain residential as opposed to having it changed to commercial right then and there? So this plan was known when the town did their plan. And at that point, they forgot to put it in. It's not like they forgot that these things even existed.
I can't reply to the order in which things happened, but like Mr. Schrader had said, he's on the plan commission for the township.
So what part was forgotten? I mean, the land didn't disappear.
Are you asking me?
I think, can I ask?
Sure.
Okay, yes.
The part that was forgotten was to write commercial in the town plan.
I'm just those two lots.
No,
there.
The whole lower end of the island.
I was thinking. So, like, everything from Locust Street on down to Usher, all of that, you're saying?
They forgot to add that in the plan. And I also might add that the industries around here have bought up most of those homes in that area as of now, and they're buying more as they come up for sale. And it's actually raising the value of the property there. It's not lowering it because they're becoming...
Mr. Schrader, I'd ask you to confine your comments to the question. I feel like a judge up here now. Because we're getting people that are getting antsy. I can tell by the shuffling and the dirty looks I'm getting. So, sorry. I've got you on the list, Jeff, for the other comments, but for now, just stick with answering her question.
Okay, thank you. That's what I needed to know.
That gets us to Leanne Paff.
Call a question.
No, not yet, because I have some people on the list that have not had a chance to speak yet, and that's a rule that I think is important to follow. One of those people happens to be sitting right next to you, Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll take a little different tack on this. As Supervisor Schwader said, and a lot of people know, that area down there is primarily commercial, and I think that's the way the town of Campbell wants it to go, and it was an oversight. And also, we keep saying that we want tourism dollars in this county and tourists to come, and the Island Girl is going to be there. I don't see how we can expect people to come if they don't have any place to park. They aren't going to come. And so I support this resolution. Thank you.
People who have spoken already once, I'm jumping over you and going to people who have not had a chance to speak yet, so I haven't forgotten you. You're on my list, but I want everybody that wants to speak once at least to have their chance. So, John Menninger?
Well, I'm ready to vote, but did Skipper Liner, this is going to lose. Does Skipper Liner want to lose here tonight, or they want it referred back to committee, or what? Because there's nobody here from Skipper Liner. This is not going to get three-quarters vote, and they're going to die, and it's going to be a year, right?
Yeah.
So then they can park on the streets on Lower French Island for the next summer. But there ain't three-quarters votes for this, so we just need to dispose of it because it's not going to pass.
Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to refer for 30 days.
Not yet. We're not going to cut off people that have had their hand raised, that have patiently waited. That we got to be fair about this. I'll come back to you on that. Chuck Spiker is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got four questions. Number one is, do you have any understanding, being a tax man, Jeff, that how much taxes is paid on those three parcels now? Real property? I've never viewed them, so I don't know what we're really talking about.
Right now, the parcels are being assessed as single-family residential. Once the zoning goes into effect and the use actually changes, then the local assessor, I don't know if the town of Campbell's done yet, but as the property sits, and this is something important for everybody in this room to know, it's what's sitting on that piece of property January 1st of every single year is what's going to be assessed. So January 1st of this year, it was residential, single-family residential. That's how it will be taxed in December. January 1st of 2009, if there's a commercial designation on it and they're using it for commercial, the property just went up in value. Same size lot that commercial property would be going for is what they'll be assessed at.
Okay, my second question, how busy is Bainbridge Street? Is that a busy street? I'm not familiar with it.
It has become in the last few years with the greenery going in up there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How many cars, there's going to be three parking lots, how many cars then are they proposing to have spaces in there for people to park then?
I can't answer that. Was that in the minutes? I don't think so. No. I can't answer that.
Miss Billings and I don't agree on many things, but this is one thing that I do agree on with her. And if you look on the two houses there, you can tell what's going to happen next. They're going to buy property more next door to it, and then you'll have that whole area there be one big parking lot. Sure. I think it's a safety issue. The three things with zoning, one of the key things is safety. I don't think this is safe for people to park there and walk across down to the boat. Thank you.
Jay Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, do you know offhand the variance between these elevations and the BFE?
No, I don't. I don't have that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ralph Geary.
Just to clarify something John said, this isn't the public hearing. That's why we get these extensive minutes from the Planning Resources and Development Committee. If Skipper Liner was here, then all the neighbors would want to be here. That's why they hold a public hearing, and that's why Jeff gives us detailed minutes. Otherwise, we'd be having a replay of what they did at their public hearing.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Geary. That is a good point.
That's
for the new members, even if Skipper Liner folks were sitting right there, we could not allow them to speak. It would not be fair. And if the neighbors were there and not Skipper Liner, we wouldn't let them speak either. Or if they were all there, we still wouldn't let them speak. That is our rule. The only people that can speak at these county board member meetings are members, of course, and then our staff and Jeff, of course, gets to lead the charge on these zoning things. But in case you're wondering, new board members, why we don't have members of the public here telling us their opinion, that's why. It's a county board rule.
Jeff. I've got an answer to Supervisor Johnson's question. As I alluded to in the presentation, each one of the petitioners are required to file an impact statement. The committee did get this. They always get it when the notice goes out into the mail. This is what they indicate for traffic. An Island Girl yacht cruise filled to capacity will generate a maximum of about 40 vehicles. Most cruises are close to 20 vehicles. During the peak of the summer season, there will be 1 to 3 cruises per day. Weekends are the heaviest. Less overflow parking will be needed during the spring, fall, and winter months. That's public record.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Jeff. To clarify, I was inquiring about the base flood elevation.
Oh. So I think you asked the question about how many cars are.
No, somebody did.
No. I'm sorry, that was Mr. Yeah. Spiker. I don't have the okay. floodplain. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anybody who's not spoken okay. once have a comment or a question? All right. We've got a few people who have spoken once that want to speak a second time, namely Jeff Schrader and Ray Ebert. Do you feel you need to make your comments before I call to Tara Johnson to make her motion to refer? Then go ahead, Mr. Ebert.
Yes, I'm just wondering, I kind of agree with my good friend Supervisor Billings, that piece to the north, I think, is perfectly acceptable. So if we turn this down, they cannot bring it back for a year, or is there a way that this board can do something to allow them to bring back the one piece?
Bill, you may be up on this one, too.
Yeah. I'm going to indicate that, and subject to what Corporation Council has to say, that the county board can refer this back to the committee for a modification. If they feel like they want to split this for some reason into two separate, east of the Bainbridge, west of the Bainbridge, you're still dealing with the protest petition. Okay?
Yeah, that would be fine, but... So is that motion, when would that motion be germane?
No.
Okay, but I think Ms. Johnson still has...
Well, she didn't make it yet. I mean, I
okay.
was going to get to her
then
after...
I guess I would like to make a motion that we split this to the property north of Marina Drive, separate from that west of Bainbridge Drive.
Okay, let me ask Bill to weigh in on this and... before we even ask for a second, just to see procedurally where we're at.
I guess my suggestion would be to refer it back to committee and allow the applicant to decide whether they want to split it. I don't think that you can split it. You can put conditions on it, but I think this is more than putting a condition on it. So my suggestion is if you want to give Skipperliner an opportunity to change their application, refer it back to committee. If they choose not to do that, then it'll come back to you for a vote yes or no on the application as proposed.
Mr. Schrader, before I have Mr. Ebert make that motion, do you have any last comment? Because you're the only other person I have on the list here. And then I'm going to call on Mr. Ebert to make this motion.
Well, the only comment I would have on that, I was going to do the same thing that Ms. Johnson, yeah, excuse me, was going to do, and I believe, and I'll ask Jeff this, but I think that Skipperliner wanted the whole thing at the same time, so I'll defer this to Ms. Johnson, and she can make her motion that she wanted to make.
Well, actually, she just got aced out of the process, and Mr. Ebert's going to beat her to it. Sorry, Tara.
I would like to withdraw my motion to split and make a motion to refer for 30
Moved
minutes.
By Mr. Ebert, seconded by Ms. Johnson, to refer this back to committee.
Is that debatable?
Yes, it is.
That is debatable, if you really, really, really want to keep talking. Mr. Spiker?
How about the legal objectors, or where are they then?
They go for the ride back to there.
Okay, and if it comes out, then it is split. What if they still legally object to it, or do they have to file a new petition?
Well, if it's referred back for another public hearing, Our next hearing is April 28th, which is our May meeting, which they're too late for already, so the next meeting will be June 2nd, that this would be on the agenda. Everybody will get a notice all over again. Normally, you would refer it back for, you know, for some cause unless you want some more information. Now, that would give the petitioners the opportunity to withdraw it.
Okay.
And wait whatever time period or bring it in separately. So it's a lot of things could happen in this
if
referral.
It was sent back to committee and nothing was changed, would the legal objector still be there and would be voting on the same thing we're
yes.
not voting on tonight, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that that petition disappears is if they withdraw it. No matter what form it comes back out of the committee, even if it's only one square inch that comes back out of the committee, that is correct.
They have to start all over. That's correct.
I just want to clarify that for people.
Any part of the original.
All right, so regardless of what we vote on, whenever it comes back, it looks like it's going to be a three-quarters vote that would be required. Okay, people mm-hmm. clear on that? Any other discussion before we take the vote on referring it back to committee? All in favor of sending it back to committee, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
One no, that would be Tara Johnson.
No.
Who was it? Oh, I'm sorry, Bridget Flood. I heard it was somewhere in that general vicinity. All right. That motion to refer passes. It is back at the committee. Have fun with that one, members of the committee. All right. That gets us to three items in a row that have to do with termination of conditional use permits. And, Jeff, I want you to take briefly 1 minute to explain why board members are going to be seeing these items as we have over the last few months. Explain what this is all about.
Okay, go. A conditional use permit is something that's kind of outside the zoning realm, and it's kind of one of those things where it might be not subject to permanent zoning, but because with a conditional use permit, you can put conditions on the actual site as opposed to having permanent zoning, where somebody could run a business 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A conditional use permit is something that has conditions on it. And
actually, my question, Jeff, is why these are coming back here for termination.
Right, but to understand a conditional use permit. These are coming back because the county has hired an inspector. And part of the inspector's job is to go out and physically take a look at each one of these conditional use permits. So what we did, we sent out letters finding out if these people are still in business or not. Because if they haven't been in business, the ordinance requires us to terminate it. So in most of these cases, these businesses have been out of business for over 12 consecutive months. In order to get these off the books so they're not counted in any records that we have or as being in business, we're asking that they be terminated. And in all these cases, they're voluntary terminations.
Tom Rauch.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Mr. Chair. I was going to be brief. I'll be even briefer. item number 16/4 is termination number 19 filed by Chad Van Langenberg to terminate conditional use permit number 641. The reason is the stockpile is removed and the conditional use permit has not been operated for a period in excess of 12 consecutive months. The committee voted unanimously to terminate, and I move the committee.
Moved by Tom Rauch, seconded by Bob Kyle. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously.
Termination. Item 17/4, termination number 20. Proposed by Chad, conditional use permit number 257 A and B. Reason for terminating, the pole building has been removed and these permits have been out of operation for over 12 consecutive months. Committee moves to terminate.
I'm sorry, Chad, who was that?
Vanden Langenberg.
All right, good job. Seconded by Bob Kyle. All in favor say aye. Opposed no. Carried unanimously. One more.
I'll spell it, but I said I was going to be brief. Finally, termination number 21, item 18-4. Proposed by Chad Vanden Langenberg. Conditional use permit number 580. Reason for termination, Mary Thompson has indicated the business has not been in operation for over 12 consecutive months. Committee voted unanimously to terminate. I move the committee report.
Moved by Tom Rauch, second by Joe Bilskemper. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously.
Item 19-4, resolution to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization to transfer funds for the Register of Deeds Imaging Project. Whereas the Register of Deeds obtained three proposals for re-imaging 29 years of real estate records and is recommending acceptance of the proposal from the U.S. Imaging in the amount of $52,936. And whereas the cost of this project was not included in the 2008 budget but can be funded through the use of special land records assessment fund dollars, which are specifically designated for the modernization of real estate records, now therefore it be resolved that La Crosse County Board of Supervisors does hereby accept the proposal from U.S. Imaging in the amount of $52,936 to re-image all real estate documents dated 1963 through 1991. Be it further resolved, the Finance Department is hereby authorized to transfer $52,936 from the Special Land Record Assessment Undesignated Fund Balance to the Land Records Information Professional Services Account 2600-64076 Fiscal Note. The estimated available balance of the Special Land Record Assessment Undesignated Funds as of January 1, 2008 is $521,762. PR&D recommend but unanimously approval. I move the committee report.
Moved by Tom Rauch to approve. Is there a second? Seconded by Don Bina. Because this is not a budgeted item, this requires two-thirds vote of the entire board to pass. Any discussion? Jeff Schrader.
What happens to the records before 1963?
Those have been done already.
Done already. Other discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously.
Item 20-4, resolution to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding authorization to purchase aerial photography images. Whereas the aerial photography purchase in 2007 was to provide additional GIS data for La Crosse County, whereas the aerial photography products that were purchased have been delivered as a single external hard drive with significant memory needs and encompassing the entire county, and whereas the purchase of multiple DVDs with portions of La Crosse County on each DVD would improve efficient delivery of these images to all parties and improve revenue potential, and whereas the estimated total cost of purchase of the individual DVDs is $7,400, and whereas the purchase was not included in the 08 budget, but funds are available for this in the Special Land Record Assessment Fund, now therefore be it resolved that Zoning, Planning, and Land Information staff is authorized to purchase the DVDs to provide geographic information system images for all of La Crosse County at a total cost not to exceed $7,400. Be it further resolved that the La Crosse County Finance Department is hereby authorized to transfer funds from the Special Land Record Assessment Fund balance to cover the cost of this purchase. Fiscal note, the Special Land Record Assessment Fund balance as of January 1 is $521,762, and the revenue generated from the sale of said DVDs will replenish these funds. As a side note, Mr. Chairman, we already have the first check to buy such DVDs, and it exceeds this dollar amount. PR&D recommends unanimously approval, and I move to approve the resolution.
Moved by Tom Rauch, seconded by Roger Plesha. This is, again, not a budgeted item, so it requires a two-thirds vote of the entire board. Any discussion? Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, what was the last part about the check, or did we bought something already? I was with you up until the last. You
yes.
Added something that made no sense.
The City of Onalaska has already sent a check to acquire their portion of this, and the charge to them will exceed the cost of buying these CDs.
Thank you, sir.
Other questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Mr. Rauch?
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. We have a recess coming up in a bit, but I want to take it now. Come on back at about 8:30. Executive Committee, Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have item 21-4 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding approval of 2008, 2009, 2010 Highway Union Contract. Whereas La Crosse County and the Highway AFSCME Union Local 227 have concluded collective bargaining negotiations, and whereas the parties have been able to resolve all issues by voluntary settlement after mediation, now therefore be it resolved that the tentative agreements of the county and the AFSCME bargaining unit approved by the membership of Local 227 on March 19, 2008, a copy of which is hereto attached, be adopted by La Crosse County and ratified by this resolution as changes to the collective bargaining agreement. The fiscal note is the estimated increase in cost of wage, fringe benefits, and roll-ups for 2008 is $179,331, a package cost of 4.7%, and for 2009, $195,803, a package cost of 4.9%, and for 2010, $198,076, a package cost of 4.7%. There are approximately 68 employees in this bargaining unit. I move its approval.
Moved by Terry Johnson, second by Vicki Burke. Bob Tond, our personnel director, is here if anybody has any questions for Bob. Nope. Mr. O'Malley, anything you need to add? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 22-4 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acknowledge the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County, namely Marsha Allens from the Emergency Services Department for 27-plus years, Barbara Palfrey from Hillview Healthcare Center, 20-plus years, Margaret Dondelinger, Lakeview Health Center, 15-plus years, Alan Wagner, Human Services Clinical Department, 13-plus years, and whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude, I move its approval.
Moved by Tara Johnson, seconded by Bob Kyle. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
Thank you. Judiciary and Law, Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 23-4 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding adopting the La Crosse County Multi-Hazards Mitigation Plan 2008-2012. Whereas La Crosse County recognizes the threat that natural hazards pose to people and property, and whereas undertaking hazard mitigation actions before disasters occur will reduce the potential for harm to people and property and save taxpayer dollars, and whereas an adopted all hazards mitigation plan is required as a condition of future grant funding for mitigation projects, and whereas La Crosse County participated jointly in the planning process with the other local units of government within the county to prepare a multi-hazards mitigation plan, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby adopts the La Crosse County Multi-Hazards Mitigation Plan 2008-2012 as an official plan, and be it further resolved that the La Crosse County Emergency Management Department will submit on behalf of the participating municipalities the adopted Multi-Hazards Mitigation Plan to Wisconsin Emergency Management and Federal Emergency Management Agency officials for final review and approval. Fiscal note, this plan was prepared by the Mississippi River Regional Planning Commission through a cooperative cost-sharing agreement with the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, the Mississippi River Regional Planning Commission, Wisconsin Emergency Management, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Adoption of the plan will make La Crosse County eligible to apply for federal and state grants to assist in the recovery from future hazards events. I move its approval.
Moved by Vicki Burke. Is there a second? Seconded by Andrea Richmond. Any discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Ms. Burke?
Yes.
Thank you. That gets us to Public Works and Infrastructure. Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I invoke General Rules of the County Board 2-027H. The title, resolved portions of the resolution and the fiscal note shall be read for consideration at the County Board meeting unless reading of the entire resolution is requested by a majority of the supervisors present. I plan on going by that rule unless the chair overrules me or the majority of the board overrules me. What I'm trying to do is not read seven paragraphs in here to alleviate the...
Anybody want him to read an additional seven paragraphs? All right.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, but I had to do that.
Thank you.
Authorization to sell La Crosse County Economic Development Fund property to Marshview Properties, LCC. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the terms of sale negotiated by the fund with the developer, including the purchase price of $375,000 based upon the price of $25,000 per acre. Be it further resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize its county board chair, county clerk, and officers of the fund to execute a warranty deed and any other necessary closing documents approved by the Corporation Council in conveying the described real estate to the developer. Be it further resolved that the fund will be responsible to repay La Crosse County for this land sale in accordance with following instructions Resolutions, Resolution 54-7-03, $3,190.50 acre for 11.45 acres, and Resolution 50-8-07, $12,500 acre for 3.55 acres, one-half of the 25,000-acre sale price within 1 year after the sale of the parcel. The fiscal note is the amount to repaid by the fund to La Crosse County for this sale shall be total of $80,907, less as portion of the closing costs that are a responsibility of the seller. Such closing costs will be set forth in the closing statement to be prepared by the First American Title Company. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, second by Mr. Leon Paff. Any discussion on this item? Jeff Schrader.
How many acres are left to be sold on the
Let me ask Brian Pakuda, our community development specialist, to come in and answer that question. This is part of the Lakeview development up in West Salem for new board members. Brian, you heard the question, I assume.
Yes, please put it on here. This here is the acreage in question. We currently, this is an old photograph, I apologize. This is Select Houses and Lumber, Kenrich Foods, Frito-Lay, Identity Works, River Steel. The road currently extends out to about the end of the green here. So all of this acreage on the north side of the road, which is, I think, approximately 12 acres of more lighter industrial commercial-type property is available. This is a 1.75-acre lot that was retained on the front of the parcels. So this is the acreage in question. The Economic Development Fund owns the green portion. The county owns the blue portion. So,
Mr. Schrader?
How many acres are there to the east to still be developed?
Until we complete the master plan, which is currently in process for the new members, we're working on a master plan of the entire county farm property, which extends up to the lake. Right now, there's slated for industrial development. There's probably like 60 acres left beyond what's, or 80 acres. I apologize, 80 acres beyond what's currently developed here.
And is there access, rail access, to all of it then?
Potentially. I mean, it depends.
The rail spur is, or the industrial lead track is kind of planned to go along the existing Canadian Pacific rail line. We could access any portion of this with a spur off of that, but it would be a probably a long and expensive spur. So. It certainly could be accessed, but we're mainly looking at everything that's along the rail would be rail served industrial, and then everything north of Industrial Drive extended.
This is Industrial Drive that would be extended out. So anything north of that would primarily be non-rail served, but more just lighter industrial property.
I'd like to make a suggestion that you at least provide for access to that by rail, because I believe rail in the future is going to be a much more important means of transportation than the trucking, because they can do it a lot more economically, and some of these places may need it.
Leon Paff.
If you're going to talk about that, that's maybe beside the subject right here on this matter. But next year, who will have the say over that anyway? The Village of West Salem, because they're in a TIF program with that. So will La Crosse County really be calling the shots? What's being done out there? Or will West Salem, the Village of West Salem?
It's a partnership.
Yes, who will call the shots?
Well, we're the property owner, so ultimately we call most of the shots with regard to that. But they have zoning authority, so they certainly call some of those shots as well. So it's definitely a partnership, and it's been built that way.
Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Mr. Spiker?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. LEC Construction Committee, Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tonight we bring to you the report on the first steps of the Law Enforcement Center project, and that has to do with the renovation and remodeling within the current jail. That was taking blocks B, C, and D, and taking D and splitting it vertically. That part of the renovation of the current jail and the garage or the storage building and the utility island. Both of these were discussed in great detail by the committee. And if you read your notes from the Law Enforcement Construction Committee meetings, you'll see that there were many questions about these two areas. At least in the last three or four meetings, it took up much of the time, and really, I think, answered to satisfaction. I would first of all like to compliment the committee because they did a great deal of work in asking some very good questions and arriving at the plans that we have now that we're putting out for bid. And also, I want to let you know that both Paul and Don, who are here tonight, and Vale, complimented the committee and the our entire criminal justice system on the way that they were able to work together to achieve the plans that we have so far and how they have been working together. So I bring these to you this evening with a motion to approve the final plans and seek bids for the housing renovation and a motion to approve the final plans and seek bids for garage and the utility island.
Okay, what we'll do is we'll hear the report first and then we'll put those motions on the floor. Paul, are you taking the lead on this?
Good evening. I'm just representing our design team, and by no means I'm the leader of it. We got Val Shute from River Architect, Don Carlson from Market & Johnson, and we also, like she said, a great committee that we're working with, and a lot of our input comes from the Sheriff's Department. So we're a very participatory team looking for their input, and even the sheriff gets all of his staff people involved when we talk about. I went over there one day and looked at some locks and what kind of keys you want. We went right up to the pod, sat down with the jailers, got their input, saying, what do you like, what kind of keys you like, the big ones, the small ones. So we're getting a lot of input from the Sheriff's Department. We've given the Sheriff's Department plans because we want to bring to you plans for approval, but we've met with the Sheriff's Department, and he's given us all his feedback. We've met with facilities. They've given us all their feedback. And so we think we have a plan here that meets everybody's needs, and we would like your approval on it. To describe a little bit what's involved, we're converting, for the new people, we're converting three old pods in the existing building to four. This helps the Sheriff's Department manage his staff or his inmate population better. We're upgrading these pods and giving them a nicer environment, and one of the alternate bids that you will see in another month when the bids come in will be skylights. We're getting more natural daylight. It helps give a better environment to the people that occupy the spaces, and hopefully they'll be better so they won't come back. We don't want them back in. So we want to restore them, give them a better environment, and that helps the Sheriff's Department manage his staff better. So this is the renovation part. It's on the second floor of the existing jail, so if you go on the tour, they can point it out to you. It'll be safer, better sight lines, and upgrade electronics. So any questions on the housing second floor portion?
Jill Billings.
Thank you. Will the women be on the second floor?
It's potential. We're making it so that it can take the female population from the other side, and that's one of the advantages that's out there. If the female population is low enough to come into this, and it has quite a good capacity here, we could bring them over and then take the advantage of the additional staff that's over there, incorporate them into, because the staffing will be a lot less if we, not less, but it'll be better managed and they can use them better in this place. Yes.
So where would they be?
In these four pods. They could,
all four?
They could be in all four. We're sizing them so there's one's 8 beds, one's 10 beds, one's 17 beds, and one's 4 beds. So the bad people are in the 4. They get single cells and pretty much lock them down. If they're better, they get a nicer environment. Movable furniture, carpeting. So
in this plan, you'll be able to offer the women incentives as the men have?
Yes.
That if they have good behavior, then they get in a more desirable living situation?
Yes, we're upgrading, like I said, the carpet in. We're calling it A, B, C, and D. This B, C, and D will have movable furniture. It'll be nicer. It'll be the plastic, or it's not plastic, but fiberglass chairs that are movable, nicer than the steel that the other side has. So,
do you see a situation where the women would only have the option of the side with the steel uncomfortable chairs and the?
Only if they're bad, they could go on this one that the individual.
Okay.
Usually, it's the bad people you give them the steel, and the nicer people you encourage them to get pizza on Wednesday or whatever. I don't know.
Makes sense to me. Thank you,
Paul. Just for clarification. Female could be in any or all of those.
Right.
If we don't need them for female, they would be used for males, right?
Correct. We've adjusted the sight lines so that they are discreet. We want sight and sound separation so they can't pass things between them. They can't see each other. And we have blinds on them in case the men are in front. We have blinds that we can close them up. So.
Okay, keep going, Paul.
Sure. The next part. Next part is the, we'll call it the garage and the utility island. This map here is a site plan. The light blue and the lower part is the existing law enforcement center. Our building site is to the left of that or to the west of that on 3rd Street. And the blue square on the top is what we propose as the garage. In order to renovate the existing law enforcement center, we need to get the cars and the vehicles out of there, including the Bearcat, get it out of there and put it in a new facility before we can remodel. So we identified the garage as a first phase and to put the facilities, some facility vehicles in there and some sheriff's equipment garage. Then we also indicated the little square, or the little rectangle in the middle. We said because the emergency generator is in the existing site about here, we want to get that out of the way so when the bids for the main building come in, we're ready to start. The power's not in the way. We don't have to wait. So it's working with Mark and Johnson and talking about schedule and planning and with facilities and saying, how are we going to get this so it's a smooth transition? When we're ready to build, we can build. We don't have to wait to move things out of the way. So that's what this little utility island, we're calling it, and that will have an emergency generator, a new emergency generator, because the loads are getting... We're actually doubling the size of the building, so we're going to have to get a new generator. And we're putting the switchgear out there. Switchgear is what takes the power from the transformer. We're going to have one line to the old building, one line to the new building, one line to the garage, so we minimize meters. We're looking at long-term costs with facilities, and they're great at coming up with these suggestions. So the specifics of the garage, pretty simple. It's a square box with a little corner carved out for salt trucks and some facility equipment, but most of it's sheriff garage. It'll be a concrete masonry colored block, sensitively designed by River Architects and our design team, but it's economical. So, any questions?
Chair Johnson.
Pass.
Brad Paff.
Just a real quick question. Where is the where do the service trucks come in and out?
Service vehicles for the building. This is the plan that when we actually get to the final, we're looking at a different road location or driveway location. So the trucks would come in off of 4th Street going north or coming down 3rd Street. And they come into this drive, and the trucks back up into this, right into the building there.
Where is the air exhaust for the buildings?
The air exhaust for the building is, some of it's back by the trucks because the trucks are going to be...
It's by the trucks?
By the trucks because we don't want any intake by the trucks.
So what would happen? Is there going to be intake into the building?
There will be intake, but it's not by the loading dock area.
It will not be by the loading dock.
Right.
Thank you.
There's going to be dumpsters, and it's not going to be a... You know, we're putting all the dumpsters and things behind a screen wall so you won't see it from 3rd Street coming down. And so it's going to be, we want to make sure we're very sensitive on separating air intake with exhaust.
I have had the opportunity to speak to some people, and I forget their official position with the county, but I believe they're with dispatch. They are concerned in this previous building that they were close to loading docks, and what happened was is there were trucks that were running at periods of the night, and of course they were coming through the air intake, and there was some concern there, and I just want to make sure that this is not duplicated.
It can be a problem, yes, if we don't keep our mind, but we're paying attention to that because we have kitchen exhaust, we have a lot of different exhausts, so we're trying to separate that.
Thank you very much.
Other questions or comments? Vicki Burke, did you have your hand up?
No, just to make the motion.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's done yet. Paul, any other comments you need to make?
That's it.
You're done? Okay. Go ahead.
Schedule. I was going to say, if you approve it tonight, we will send it out put it on the street, print it, and the bids will be opened on the 13th of May, ready for your 15th board meeting, and we'll come back with the cost of the building as their bid.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll take the motion first to 26-4, motion to approve the final plans and seek bids for the housing renovation. I move for its approval.
Moved by Vicki Burke, second by Ann Fisher. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the second motion is a motion to approve the final plans and seek bids for the garage and utility island. I move for its approval.
Moved by Vicki Burke, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Ms. Burke?
Yes,
Thank you. Before we do items for future agenda, these gold sheets, Jay Johnson, Robert Erickson, Jill Billings, Bill Brockmiller, Barrett Johnson, and Tammy Gamroth. We need those from you. You don't leave till we get them. We got big people by each doorway. All right. This is the section where we do items for future agenda and announcements and so forth. Pat Chippers has one. You bet, Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I planned on doing this at a later date, but I decided that tonight would probably be the best time to do this. I had something written out at home I wrote out a few weeks ago, but I came from out of town and just made it here on time, so I didn't have a chance to get it. So 2 years ago, I ran for the county board, for a seat on the county board in District 32. At that time, I owned my own business. I had time. Opportunity to be able to serve my constituents and to serve diligently on the county board. Since then, I have sold my business, and I have a change of careers that takes me out of town, takes me away from my family, and takes me away from meetings for the county board. Because of that, time with my family has become very precious. My kids miss me. My wife misses me. I miss my kids and my wife. It saddens me to say that as of May 1st, I'm going to be resigning on the county board. And it's not due to anything that anybody has done here. I know there's a few people that are going to be upset, like Ray Ebert.
It doesn't take much.
Yeah, right. But it's been a very, very difficult decision for me. I've pondered it for several months. I actually was not going to run for re-election, but when I saw that nobody was running against me, I felt that my district had to be represented in some way. But since then, somebody did run against me. As a write-in candidate, it was a last-minute thing. Somebody that has been on the county board before, somebody that can that has the time and the opportunity to actually do this job with more dedication than I've been able to in the past. So with that, I would like to say it's been a pleasure, and I'm sure that Chairman Doyle, I have confidence that Chairman Doyle will put somebody in my position that can be more dedicated at this time. So thank you very much.
Pat, we wish you the best. Jerry Sobranek has a comment.
The first conversation I ever had with Pat Schipper was a few weeks after he defeated Arlene Benrud. The three of us met at Arlene's house. Pat had no idea what Arlene had accomplished in her 14 years on the board. So as I told Pat about her positions that she held and that she was the first woman to chair the Highway Committee and the first woman to chair the State Highway Committee, I've known Arlene for over 35 years, but I had no idea of how many people Arlene knew from WCA around the state. I told Pat that the first time I attended WCA state conference that people would yell out, "Hi, Arlene," and I would ask, "Who's that?" And she'd say, "Oh, that's so-and-so from Milwaukee County, or that's from somebody from Outagamie County, Brown County, and so on." I said, "Is there anyone here that you don't know?" Pat was just as amazed as I was, and as the stories of accomplishments went on, Pat was visibly moved and kept apologizing. He said that if he would have known this, he would not have run. I'm happy to say that Pat and Arlene have become very good friends since that day. Pat has told me how bad he feels about missing meetings. However, his job changed and he did not allow him time to make all the meetings. Pat told me this was a lifelong ambition of his, and he really feels terrible about having to leave the county board and his friends here. We'll miss you, Pat, and I know how hard this is for you. I wish you and your family the best of luck. Pat.
Thank you, Jerry. I think Jerry is the chair of the Return Arlene to the Board Committee. Is that a fair guesstimate? I will be making an appointment to replace Pat, and as I said, we wish you the best of luck, Pat. You can probably suspect who I will be appointing to that position, but that will wait till our next meeting. Any other announcements? Mr. Spiker.
I don't have an announcement.
You're not resigning?
That may disappoint a few people. The ambulance service with Tri-State, the agreement ran out on 12/31/07. Is that renewed every 30 days automatically, or where are we? And I will tell you in a second why I bring that subject up, and I have had two or three phone calls on this.
We have no contract at this point. Okay. We have been engaged first in mediation and now just direct negotiations without the mediator. We have a meeting with the City of La Crosse coming up in a week or two, next Thursday, and I think we are very close to the point where we'll be making some sort of an announcement.
Okay, I talked to Steve a little bit about this, but my understanding, the City of Eau Claire Fire Department went to an ambulance service for the rural areas. I don't know if that's effective now or it's down the road. Will that implement anything that we're doing?
I don't think so.
The out of the City of La Crosse and the City of La Crosse too itself are very worried about ambulance service, and that we provide. Tri-State is doing just a simply outstanding job there, and we sure would hate to lose it.
Let me just tell you that I live myself outside the City of La Crosse, and I'm middle-aged, getting overweight. Ambulance service is more and more important to me every day, so I will be looking out for the best interest of our entire country, county, especially the town of Onalaska, maybe the entire country. Other discussion, announcements, questions, comments, complaints? Vicki Burke?
I just wanted to make an announcement. I think some of you maybe saw in the paper this week about the herons that the pump house was doing. And I don't know if you know, but both La Crosse County and the city together sponsored one of those herons. And I'm always careful when I say herons because I'm afraid I'm going to say herring instead of heron. So I don't know that they've made a decision where that is going to be, but it's the heron was painted by Jane Bruner from who works at City Hall. That's my understanding. And so just to let you know that I'm your representative on the Art Steering Committee, and We've been doing a lot of discussion about the arts in the City of La Crosse and for La Crosse County, and so just those should be appearing. I think they're appearing at several sites, and you may have seen them, but just know that the one for La Crosse County, I'm not sure where that's going to be.
I believe it's going to be at the airport. The one that's jointly funded by the city and county is going to be at the airport.
You can pick up a at the pump house that tells you where they're going to be located so that you can see all of them.
Any other announcements, questions, comments, items for future agendas? Again, I would remind people that you are all invited to join us at Sloopy's Alma Mater on the north side immediately after we're done here. And I see Mr. Kyle has his hand up. Mr. Kyle moves to adjourn, seconded by Jeff Schrader. All in favor say aye. Opposed no. We are adjourned.